ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्यामवारथ सशत पत्र लोचन विषंग अस्त्र सुरुचा सुपेशस सर्वे चतुर बहव उन्मिषन् मणि रवेथ निष्ठाभरणा सुवर्चसा श्यामावदाथ सदपत्रलोचना विषङ्गवस्त्रास् सुरुचा सुपेशसा सर्वे चतुर्बाहव उन्निषन्मणि प्रवेक्षनिष्ठा भरणा सुवर्चसा श्यामावराथा शतपत्रलोचना विषङ्गवस्त्रा सुरुचा सुपेशसा सर्वे चतुर्बाहव उन्मिषन्मणि प्रवेकनिष्ठा भरणा सुवर्चसा श्यामावदाथ शतपत्रलोचना विषङ्गवस्त्रा सुरुचा सुपेशसा सर्वे चतुर्बाहव उन्मिषन्मणि प्रवेकनिष्ठा भरणा सुवर्चसा श्यामा स्काय ब्लूइश Avadatha, glowing. Shatapatra, lotus flower. Lochana, eyes. Vishanga, yellowish. Vashtra, clothing. Surucha, greatly attractive. Supesha, growing youthful. Sarve, all of them. Chatu, four. Bahava, hands. Unmishan, rising luster. Mani, pearls. Praveka, superior quality. Nishka Abharana, ornamental medallions. Suvarchasa, effulgent. The inhabitants of the Vaikuntha planets are described as having a glowing bluish complexion. Their eyes resemble lotus flowers, their dress is of yellowish color, and their bodily features very attractive. They are just the age of growing youth. They all have four hands. They are all nicely decorated with pearl necklaces with ornamental medallions, and they all appear to be effulgent. Purport. The inhabitants in Vaikuntha Loka are all personalities with spiritual bodily features, not to be found in the material world. We can find the descriptions in the revealed scriptures, like Srimad Bhagavatam. Impersonal descriptions of transcendence in the scriptures indicate that the bodily features in Vaikuntha Loka are never to be seen in any part of the universe, as there are different bodily features in different places of a particular planet, or as there are different bodily features between bodies in different planets. Similarly, the bodily features of the inhabitants in Vaikuntha Loka are completely different from those in the material universe. For example, the four hands are distinct from the two hands in this world. So this is, we see here, a process of elevation or realization. That Lord Brahma has performed his austerities. From that, the Lord was pleased. Right? Because this austerity was in line, what was appropriate for his position. Right? It means tapa, means the wealth of the Brahmins. He is the head Brahmin of the universe. And so performance of austerities was very appropriate. Krishna was very pleased. From that, then we see that being pleased, he reveals his dham. Right? Generally we think of, okay, the Lord reveals himself, then it'll just be him. But think about it. If it's just him, then what's around? Right? Even the impersonalists have to put at least some clouds there or an om sign. Right? Because it's just kind of uncomfortable that here's a person with nothing around him. Does that make sense? Right? So even the impersonalists who claim that there is nothing still have to put an om sign there. Or, you know, at least some clouds, or both, you know, if you really want to get artistic. Right? You've seen these nice Hindu pictures, right? You have Krishna in the clouds with om. Like that. You know the way that song went? Krishna in the clouds with om. Like that. So. So then, the idea is that there must be a place. Somebody's manifest because there's a place. The place goes with the person. If you want to see the personality properly manifested, there must be a place. Right? Means if you take a high court judge, put him in all his robes and that, give him his nice little wooden mallet in his hand, and stick him out on the soccer field with, you know, tons of people there and the, you know, all the seats cheering, it would seem strange. Right? But then you put him in a courtroom with a nice big wooden desk, you know, like that, something he can bang on, make noise. You know, then it looks good. Right? He would properly manifest his mood. You know, if you plunk that judge down in the field, he might feel a little uncomfortable. Or most will take a nice bow, you know, like that, show his gavel like this, and then walk off with everybody cheering. But that's all he can manifest of his mood. He can just make do. Right? But if you put him in the court, then he can fully manifest, you know, here's, you know, his honor that everyone has to stand up for and everything like that. And then it makes sense. There's some meaning to it. So, therefore, the first thing to manifest is the Lord's dham, that place where he is able to manifest his personality, right? Because manifestation of personality is actually what we're interested in, right? Of course, due to long time in the material world, sometimes we're not too interested in personality, because either personalities are very strange, or we're just tired of so much work and interaction and having to put out so much energy for others, and we just want, you know, our own space, which means nothing, right? Void. So, but otherwise, then, the person, seeing the person manifesting their qualities, that's actually the human element, right? So the whole human endeavor is how to create situations in which people can manifest fully their nature so that they get the proper taste and others get the proper taste. Right? Because nobody likes a situation which wasn't quite there. There wasn't enough salt, there wasn't enough utensils to serve, there wasn't a proper place to sit, or people weren't really into eating, or people weren't really into serving. It's all there, but it didn't quite happen. Nobody will ever be satisfied. So you project that into any situation. In other words, the fullest possible experience you could get that's appropriate for the situation, that's what everybody is looking for. And why? Because that's the way the Lord, that's what the Lord is looking for. So according to his mood, then that place manifests. Then within that place, then there have to be people, right? Rasa is not interacting with yourself, right? Okay, you get yourself a mirror, you can have some fun. But how much can you have fun, right? Unless your mirror's everywhere, but then, you know, it becomes a little old quite quickly. So then the same example, we have the, you know, high court judge. Okay, great, he's there in that great courtroom, but there's nobody there. It also, you cannot manifest the full potential of personality. So therefore then you need the devotees. So there's the Lord's Dham, then the devotees. So we can see like this that the whole place is being established. The Dhamma is there because everything has to sit on that and be in comparison to that. Then you put the devotees. And then like this you add everything until the Lord manifests. So this is also the method of Manasapuja or Dhyan. Is that the first thing is you establish the Dhamma. Divya Vrindaranya Kalpadrumara. In Vrindavan, under a Kalpadruma tree. Divya Ratnagara Simhasanasto. On a, nice decorated jeweled throne. Then you have Shishi Radha Shila Govindadevo. Right? Krishnalidhi Sevimano Smarami. Then there's the pastime. So you have the Dham, all the arrangements. The Lord is there, then you have the pastime of that interaction. Right. This is just how things work. So whenever something is planned, you have to plan everything. It means if you find that there's a fault in the execution of any of your activities, it sometimes you can see it will come back to not having completely thought out everything. You thought out the service, or you didn't think out the place it would happen in, or you did, but you didn't count into it the different people, or you didn't think what the different people are going to do. Right? So all these are considered. So we see here that the Lord, because of this being pleased with Lord Brahma, then is starting to open and reveal himself. And then he's revealing in this process, as we've described, through his Dham, through his devotees. And in this way, then Brahma will know him. Also here is because Brahma does not have, he's pure. He's the most pious living entity in the universe. That he is able to understand what he should do. But he has not developed that affection for the Lord. Therefore, the Lord has manifested himself as Vaikuntapapi, right? Vaikuntha is being manifest. So it's something special. If they show up with four arms, then you know that, okay, it's not the material world, right? It's something special. The way they're dressed and everything, the way their bodily features, then you know that this is the spiritual world. So that Krishna wants to make sure that Brahma understands. And from this, because anyone can approach Narayan, he's God, right? Generally everybody accepts as something senior. So the concept of God or bigger than you or supreme, that is fairly easy concept. You know, of anybody who's honest. Now to have love for that person, that's another thing. That's a different point altogether. Right? It means most people of the world have respect for God. But the concept of actually having love, that's another. Some will talk about it. There are groups that do actually talk that one should develop, or they don't talk about it, but if you mention it, they will immediately agree to the point, because they used to talk about it. You know, you go back in time, then that was a discussion point. You know, after, you know, you get tired of how the angels can dance on the head of a pin, then you can discuss stuff like, you know, developing love for God. So, that will be there, but in general, it's not. It's generally, it's fear. Because you can test it by, okay, you say there's love for God. Okay, so then why are you following the regulations of your religion? Why would you be following them? And generally the answer will be, because if you do, you'll go to heaven. If you don't, you'll go to hell. Right? Now, if you said, well, if you do, you go to heaven. If you don't, there would be no hell. There might be a lot of extracurricular activity. Right? Because there's no worry. Right? It means you do whatever it is, and, you know, all paths lead back to, you know, like that. So they wouldn't worry about it. But they do worry. So it's actually out of fear that they have a relationship with God. So that's how you actually understand that it's not manifesting the full embodiment of human emotions and culture. Because if it's only based on fear, then one can't get to love. Right? Because fear means one is not secure. Right? And if one's not secure, then one cannot be confident. Right? Many are confident, okay, I'm going to heaven, you're going to hell. But, okay, nice, but what about God? You know? I mean, okay, he's a great doorman, you know? He keeps everyone from getting through. And, you know, sometimes he has others do it for him, but he stands there. And you come up before, and then, you know, everybody sits on this side or that side, and one side gets, you know, gets the barbecue, and the other side, you know, gets to walk around God, through the door behind God, and that's, you know, haribo, okay, done the God bit, now let's get on with the enjoyment. So, the idea is that, oh, what about that love for God? If it's here, if affection is so important, people will give up their lives and everything for affection, then why that wouldn't continue on the spiritual platform and God being supreme? Right? Everybody turns to Him, right? It means somebody has their wife or their children, but that's important for you. To someone else, it doesn't matter. But somehow that everybody, God's important. So that would mean then the supreme affection would be God. Right? So then manifesting this then is another category. So if one is respectful for God, then he manifests as Narayana. One has affection, then we see it becomes more and more, goes closer into the more intimate spiritual planets. So you get into Goloka, and then into Mathura, then into Vrindavan. Does that make some sense? So, the whole thing is based off the mood. Now one would say, well, why doesn't God just, you know, just give us this, you know, Braja Bhakti, and like that. But the point is it doesn't work like that. You have to understand who you're dealing with. Right? It means, it makes sense to us. Right? But we have to understand it doesn't actually make sense. Because we're feminine. So, unfortunately, we think God's going to act in a feminine way. Right? Why doesn't he just do this for us? No, that's feminine. Masculine is how you approach them, that's how they respond. That's the difference. So that's why God will manifest as you manifest interaction with Him. Because He is man. He is the supreme male. Does this make sense? Because otherwise, so how many heard the things, why doesn't He just make us, why does He make us perfect, why doesn't He just do this, why did He put us, why did, you know, all this, it's all His problem. right? But this is feminine spin doctoring, right? That's what we're doing. It's we're at fault that we make the other at fault, right? That's the method, right? It works. It works really well. But the reality is, he is a person who is male. So he doesn't act like that. So as we approach him, that's how he is going to reciprocate with us. So if we're formal, he will be formal with us. If we are affectionate, he'll be affectionate with us. That's just the way it goes. Right? You understand? Let me say, why? But no, that's just the nature. The masculine is fixed, the feminine is not fixed. Right? It's from moment to moment, it will never be the same. Therefore, the masculine principle has to respond to the feminine, because it's always changing. Does this make sense? Yeah? So, because it's changing, then the masculine reciprocates with the feminine on whatever platform the feminine is manifesting right now. Right? And if they do that, everything will work. If they don't, if they think, well, I want to act like this and disregard the feminine, then there'll be no bonding. There'll be no interaction. Does that make sense? Because think about it. When you go into the temple, right, then is it always the same? Sometimes it means we'll come in, the ritual will be the same, but sometimes we're in a good mood, sometimes we're not in a good mood. Right? And if we're in a good mood, then we may be interacting with the deity, we may be interacting with everybody else in the temple, not the deities. Or we're in a bad mood, and so we're interacting with the deities because, you know, we're looking for shelter. Or we're in a bad mood, we don't want to interact with anybody, including the deities. Right? So that's what God's got to put up with. Right? Think about it. You know? And also, if you look at it, it's when we want to come. Right? We come to see God when we want to. He's there all day, waiting. Right? Isn't that? That's what the masculine is supposed to do. He always has to be on call. So whenever, if we want, then we can get that interaction. Right? So he's doing it. And then when we decide to come, then, depending upon our mood, he interacts. So that's why we may think, well, why does he do like this? Why didn't he just, you know, just bang, here's, you know, Krishna and Vrindavan and the flute and the cows and the gopis. But it doesn't mean that we would reciprocate that. Right? You don't put on your best clothes to go to a situation that it's inappropriate. Nobody will notice or it's the wrong thing. You know, you don't pull out your valuables. You don't show people your best friends or your nicest things or manifest your most intimate, you know, discussions or unless you know the person. It's just human. Right? So the point in all these different things that we're discussing is Krishna's the most, you know, personal human being. You understand? If you look at it, we're the ones that got problems. Generally we take it, you know, we're very human, and then there's this kind of like God thing going on. You know, it's very cut and dry. No, that's where it's all happening. We're the ones that are cut and dry. We're the ones that manifest only parts of personalities and half of this and a quarter of that because we don't know how to manifest it, how to interact, to make the situations for it. We don't know. We just don't know. So the idea is that if we accept this and understand, then it works throughout. It's God's creation. Everything is Krishna. So that's why it will manifest and work exactly the same way, no matter if it's in the spiritual world or in the material world, because it's all Krishna's energy. In the spiritual world, it's superior energy, so its manifestation is a superior quality. And here, it's material energy, so its manifestation is of inferior quality. But the method is the same. The principles don't change. Right? Our perception of it may change. That's because we're trying to be the male, of course. So that's what makes things weird. So in our perception, it's like this or like that. But in actuality, it's not. It's all Krishna's energy and it's all working. Right? Maya is a very nice devotee who's just trying to, keep herself engaged in Krishna's service. Right? We're the ones that are trying to get in the way. Right? We've decided that Maya's ours, right? Instead of she's a person, devotee who's serving Krishna. Does that make sense? So the perception is what's different. In reality, it's the same place. It's just a matter of superior and inferior of it. You know, you have a house, you have superior rooms, you have inferior rooms. Right? But it's all the same house. So it's all the same Krishna's manifestation, but just there's inferior areas. This one quarter is inferior and the three quarters is superior. And within the three quarters, then 51% of that is more superior. And then of that, then it has four parts, and then one of those is superior. Does that make some sense? Yeah. So in this, it's a matter of accepting that spiritual life is personal. And that it's actually quite okay and quite normal to be a human being. But the point is being a human being in connection with Krishna. Being a human being not in connection with Krishna is not really being a human being. It means there's different levels of not being. There's pious is more of that, you know, impious is less. Does that make some sense? Okay, so, yeah. The point is Krishna is going to manifest himself to you through the Dham, through the devotees. So that should be appreciated. Right? The Dham should be appreciated, the devotees should be appreciated. If that's appreciated, then you can get to Krishna. If you don't like the Dham, you don't like the devotees, how do you get to Krishna? Because Krishna is only going to manifest when it's all there. Right? The king doesn't walk into an empty room. He comes into a full court that's already happening. Mantras are going, music's playing, you know, it's all going on. Then he comes. He doesn't come in and then tell everybody, you know, hey, this, that. That we may like that because we want to be in control, right? We feel we're God because we put it all and made it all happen, right? But God, it's you make it happen, then he walks in. That's your service. Right. Is it okay? Is there any questions on this or comments? Or
how do we appreciate the Dham?
How do we appreciate the Dham? It's the place of Krishna's pastimes. So that means his internal potency is manifesting things in such a way that he likes it, according to his taste, to support the particular rasa, or let's say experience of the pastimes that he wants to have. Right? So then, and because it's the Lord's place, then everything is increased. So she herself, she can give that love of God, the dust from the Dham, Giriraj, and the Jamuna. They can all give this affection or attraction to Krishna, which is important, because if you're attracted, then that can develop into love, which matures. Right? So that's an important thing. And not only that, everything here is speeded up. It's 1,000 times increased. So whatever benefit you would get is increased 1,000 times. So you chant, you know, how you say, one day you chant your rounds, it's actually equal to 3 years of chanting your rounds anywhere else. So it's it's no joke, you know. It's no joke. And also they're very kind. They tend to see, if there's any sincerity, then, how do you say? If it's in connection with Krishna, then that is seen. Like someone the other day was telling me, very interesting point, just on this. Someone had mentioned to Prabhupada, there was this, I think in the 80s it was popular, there was this one personage who identified himself as a deprogrammer. And he used to try to take devotees out of the devotional, you know, consciousness into their, you know, what he felt was the proper mundane consciousness. So one of the, I guess, devotees who had, you know, after he was finished with his thing and then went back to the temple, then had mentioned to other devotees who told Prabhupada that this man right in front of the devotee would take Prabhupada's books and with great, emotion, just fully focused on how much he disliked these books, right? He'd rip them up right in front of the devotee. So then the devotees were thinking, well, Prabhupada's going to say, wow, this guy's going to go to hell, this, that, blah, blah. Prabhupada said, he'll take human birth because he touched my books. So he had full, I mean, one is just there, but here it's even, he was fully absorbed in the books, right? You see, the demons, they do okay when they're fully absorbed. So that's the uniqueness of Krishna. It's not a matter, right and wrong means, is it in connection with Krishna or it's not? Right means it's in connection, wrong means it's not. So in the Dham, then all that's increased. And so the benefit is there. So the service that can be done to the Dham is, one can clean the Dham, one can beautify it, one can remember, and one can glorify. These are the four services one can render, like that, specifically to the Dham. And then any other service that's done for Krishna then is increased. So if one appreciates that, and also appreciates because it's there, there's something special. Like, if you think about it, it means so many variety of devotees are there in the Dham. And generally, sometimes the same, but sometimes more variety than you would find in your average temple. Right? And you sometimes might even think, how is this person here? Right? But if you don't have a critical eye, then you, if you watch long enough, you generally see. There's something about it. I've known devotees, I've thought that, you know, what's, and then one of, no matter where they go, whatever time of the day, they're singing Hare Krishna. Loudly. Maybe not nicely, but, and this has been going on for as long as I know, maybe 10 years. Like that. You know, someone else is, you know, they never seem to be into sadhana. When it comes to kirtan and that, they dance so nicely. They're just so absorbed. Anything else, then it's all modern, this, that, but this, they're just so absorbed. So then there's something that is there that Krishna somehow or other appreciated. You know, he touched the books, right? And so then it goes on. So it's something quite unique. It doesn't function like any place else. Right? That also you can see is, you know, things, why they work out, how they work out, it's special. Right? Like that. It's got its own management like that. Is that okay?
Like we see Lord Brahma, he had a very high position, he was given the service of engineering in the material world. But then we don't hear so many intimate pastimes of Lord Brahma and Krishna. And then when Lord Brahma, the time he got him, Haridas Thakur, then we hear a lot of affectionate pastimes between Haridas Thakur and Lord Chaitanya. But it's not the same.
It's not the same. Yeah. Could you hear? He said, he's saying is that we don't hear much intimate pastimes between Lord Brahma and Krishna as the engineer of the universe, but when he comes as Haridas Thakur, then we hear of many nice interactions. Okay, let us just say, I mean, just on the light side, just very obvious. If you had to spend some time, would you spend it with someone who is, you know, the most absorbed in chanting and kirtan and everything like that, or with an engineer? You ever met an engineer? Ever gone to their office? You know, it's very cut and dry because that's what they do. So the post of Brahma is, he knows everything in the universe, he knows everything how it's going on. This is basically, the secondary creation is non-different from him. So you know, but so how does that work? Savagya is not a great platform to interact on. I mean, Savagya means you know everything at all times. But Krishna, when he performs pastimes, he becomes Mugdata, which means he doesn't know what's going on. Yogamaya, he allows himself to be covered by Yogamaya so that he doesn't know what's going to happen. Right? He goes to Radharani's house and he, you know, everything's quiet, and he climbs the big tree in the courtyard there so that he can get up to Radharani's outsider window, and then he, you know, tries to get her attention like this, you know, so that, you know, then they can meet and like that. And then Jatila and company decide it's too hot inside, they decide they're going to sleep in the courtyard for the night. Right? So Krishna, you could say, well, he's God, he should have known, you know, but then what's the pastime, you know? What's the fun? Right? Ignorance is bliss, right? Does that make sense? So, as Brahma, it's very formal. Everybody in the universe goes back to Brahma. So it's like, how do you have a relaxed relationship really with anybody? Understand? It's very, very formal. Important, necessary, it's what that living entity wants, but it's when he comes as Haridas Thakur, then he's coming, not as the topmost, he's coming as the lowest. I mean, Brahma is the highest birth, Haridas Thakur comes as the lowest. You know, he doesn't have anything. Brahma, the whole universe is his family, but Haridas Thakur doesn't have anybody. Right? You ever hear of Haridas's family? Or anything? No, there's nothing. So like that, so he just has the holy name. Well, instead of having to work with universal affairs and, you know, which demon is doing this and, you know, who's going to kill that and, you know, like this, then he's just chanting the holy name. So that's what's interesting to Krishna, because Krishna's creation is not as interesting to him as interacting with the devotees. Does that make sense? So these pastimes are more interesting than creation. Creation, it's a small thing for Krishna, it's not big. We like it because the passions think, oh, we're doing so much and all that. But for Krishna, it's the smallest part of his energies do that. Right? Does that make sense? Besides that, just on the other point, is we don't hear about, because the Purusha, the thousand-headed Purusha, the deity that we hear of in Purusha Shukta, he lives with Lord Brahma, so that all they do is they just spend their time talking and discussing and like that. But it's, you could probably, another aspect you could probably bring in is you have the person who's done the primary creation and the person who's done the secondary creation. So the discussions they might have on that level, we might not find much either interest or even ability to understand. Right? Like that. But when it comes to Haridas Thakur, when you're dealing on the human element, then there's so much tasty rasa, so many nice things. Is that okay? Oh, yeah, last
one. For the same point, Brahma actually is told that Kaur was not in the Vrindavan, so that Krishna had pastime with him once.
Yeah,
that's a very intimate
pastime. Yeah. Comments being made that when he stole the cows and calves, then there was a nice close relationship there. But you notice that he stole the cows and calves, and he didn't really recognize that this was Krishna. Like that. Because he was, I think, I don't know what it was, is he was either holding the food or something in his left hand. And, you know, the rule is it's in the right hand, so God would never do that. So this can't be God, you know, so. So Krishna has fun like that, you know. Because that's the whole point. Am I God just because I follow the rules? Or am I God because of the qualities I have? You know, that's the whole. Because his left hand is also pure. Like that. Our left hand's not. His is. It doesn't matter for him. He can hold his foot and it'd still be fine, right? Yeah. Okay. This is fast, isn't it? Okay. Yes.
How is it that performing austerities please Krishna?
How does performing austerities please Krishna? Because there is an endeavor to somehow or another bring yourself closer to Krishna through that austerity. Now in this one has to know what is austerity. That's the important thing. Because generally we think of austerity as, you know, standing on our head or, you know, things like that. Like the demons, you know, cutting off the head, offering it into the fire and stuff like that. Austerity actually means, for the human being, performance of your prescribed duties. That's it. So if we have prescribed duties, if the king manages his country according to the Shastra and according to the Brahmins, that and protects the people, that is his austerity. For a Brahmin, if he studies the Shastra and teaches it, that's considered performing the most extreme austerities all the way up to the tips of his nails, even if he's wearing a garland and nice scents and just had a fabulous meal. But that's the most austere thing a Brahmin can do, is study the Shastra. These other things are considered not so important. Right? Because Brahmin is the mouth. Mouth speaks. Mouth doesn't not eat. Right? You know what I'm saying? Mouth eats, mouth speaks. Right? You can say mouth doesn't eat, but also hands don't eat. Foot doesn't eat. So what's unique about the mouth is that it speaks. You can only speak if you study. Hands, they protect. Right? Like that. Stomach, it generates, how you say? Energy for the body. And the legs carry it around. So in other words, the highest austerity for the mouth is, the Brahmins is to study and teach. For the Kshatriyas to protect. For the Vaishyas is to generate economics and give it in charity. Right? And for the Shudra is to assist whoever there is helping without any bad feelings. That's the top austerity of all those.
Is that?
For him, here, because he's doing, these kind of like, you're trying to get control over the material energy, so therefore then he did 1,000 years of meditation. Like that. But you're dealing with, how you say, a different kind of, you know what I'm saying? The ones that I mentioned are for getting out of the material world, working with it and getting out. That austerity is for creating it. You know what I'm saying? Because you need material power. Right? Devotee's not interested in material power, so it means it's already worked into, we have fasts, we have these things, so we do those kinds of things in such a way that we can do it. He could meditate for 1,000 years without a problem. He didn't one time think, oh, I'm hungry, or I'm thirsty, or I'm tired. So therefore, that's the natural thing. Does that make sense? You know, the mother is in the kitchen. She's cooking. She's taking care of this, that. And she feeds the family. Maybe she eats then. Maybe she eats later. It's an austerity. But for her, she's not thinking, oh, I'm so hungry. Because of the affection that's happening. Because of the relationship. Right? So because he's trying to find out what is the supreme, therefore there's no problem there. for the human beings, then they've been given this method. And he's following the instructions given by the previous acharyas. That is their austerity. Doing that, that's the best. Because austerity, through austerity, then one gains, how you say, piety. Right? And for us, piety means it's in connection with Krishna. We're not interested in mundane piety. So one can study just to be knowledgeable, but we study so that we can understand Krishna consciousness and teach Krishna consciousness. We protect the devotees so that they can perform devotional service. We create economics and distribute that so that devotional activities can go on. Right? Because in, you know, this kind of setup, money is necessary. And we perform our services to the best so that those who know where we're going can most easily get that done. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the kind of, then it's devotional piety. One, it liberates you from the material world, and two, it situates you in Krishna consciousness.
What about
bodily austerities? Bodily austerities, if they're appropriate and if they don't disturb. If they disturb, then it's not going to. It's just like, let's give an example. You're healthy, you need 6 hours of rest a day. You're sick, you need 8 hours. Your nerves are shot, you need 10. Right? Now, if an austerity is performed beyond, you know, like they say fasting or other things, beyond what you can do, it affects the nerves. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, it's not, just like yoga, you cannot perform an asana any quicker or farther than is natural. You do it farther than that, it's actually bad for you. You do pranayama, you do it longer than you should, it will destroy your nerves. You do it appropriately, it will increase. So that's the point, is finding the reality of what actually is where I am situated. That's part of self-realization. What I can do for Krishna. It's not a matter of ego, because for Krishna it doesn't matter. It's the example of Hanuman carrying the tops of mountains and the, you know, the spider or squirrel just kicking in grains of dust. Because it's the endeavor that is important for Krishna. So the point why austerity is important, or even stuff like fasting or other bodily austerities are good, is because they create focus. And if there's focus, then there's full endeavor. If there's full endeavor, that gets rid of ignorance. Right? When there's not full endeavor, you see, let's say there's a person who doesn't have focus, they actually cannot get anything done. Without focus, nothing happens. Right? So you have to have a focus, you have to have a goal. Then the activity will be very clear and complete. Right? So the austerity focus is, okay, I'm not eating. Why I'm not eating? You know, I'm going to please Krishna, I'm going to chant 64 rounds today. And so you find that then that day things go very well, because the focus is so good. So little things come up, but they don't bother you. Other days when they're not focused, then they bother you, because there's no focus. So you see, those who are successful have focus, no matter what it is. Even they're demons. But the reason they're successful, we say, why are these conscious? Because they're focused. They have full faith that if they just do this and make this money, they will be happy here. So, and they want to be happy, and they're trying hard. That's why they're successful. Right? That's why Prabhupada goofed on hippies, because they don't have any direction. They're just, there's nothing. Net issues. Right? There's no focus, you know. It's like
you say, Krishna doesn't care about cold shower or warm shower.
The point is why you're taking that warm or cold shower. Krishna doesn't care if you take a warm shower or a cold shower, right? But why are you taking that warm shower? Because you don't want to take a cold shower. Why? You know what I'm saying? Why are you taking the cold shower? Because you're better than everybody else. So that's the whole point, is in the beginning you're going to show your affection by externals. because we don't have any internal. So that's why the rules and regulations are there. But with time, then it's a matter of the quality of why you're doing it. Externally, it shouldn't change. Like that. But the point is no, he doesn't care if you take the warm or cold shower, but what's your decision? Why? The Shastras say a cold shower. Shastras are written by Krishna. That means Krishna likes cold showers, right? It mentions when Krishna takes his bath, they collect cool water. Doesn't mean freezing cold. Cool water that they put in moonstone jugs. Moonstone is cool. And that's what you use to rinse the Lord with. Where you can use warm water in the Abhishekas. Krishna also uses hot water. But the last rinse is always with cold water. That's the way Krishna likes it. Right? You like somebody, you do what they do. Right? I like somebody, I copy what they do. That's the way Krishna takes his bath. That's what I do. Krishna brushes his teeth, then takes a bath. So I brush my teeth, take a bath. Right? So, it's what we do. It's like that. So, it matter of why are you doing it? So, I'm following, I don't know what's going on or why, but I've been told to do like this and I want to go back to Godhead, and I understand from authorities following the spiritual authority, I'll go back to Godhead. So, that's a good motive. Maybe you don't understand why you're taking this path, this, that, blah. Right? Does that make some sense? So the why is that's human life. Okay, you're taking a hot bath, you're taking a cold bath, whatever. But why? That's where the human element comes in. You don't know why, then animals also, birds also love taking baths. Cool baths, of course, but you know. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you see up in the Himalayas where it's freezing, Krishna's put hot springs. Right? So the sadhus there, they take hot baths. But, you know, of course it's, you know, freezing cold outside and they walk around barefoot. Is that okay? Okay, so we'll end here and then if anybody wants to continue any questions, we'll continue for some time after the class. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Mithai Gaur Udhavindra ki.
My question is, when we're talking about austerity,
the
highest
of course, but
to
I and mine and the other, okay. The connection between I and mine and heat. See, I and mine is the whole foundation of material consciousness. And it's the key to the spiritual upliftment. I and mine translate, I is fear, mine is attachment. I is masculine, mine is feminine. Right? Does that make sense? Everything, because any activity has to have sambandha and prayojana for it to happen. So I is sambandha and mine is prayojana. Okay? Then based on what is your concept of I and mine, that will determine what your activity is. So if your concept of I and mine is material, then your activities necessarily are material. If your concept of I and mine is spiritual, then your activities will be spiritual. Right? So that's the whole thing. So when you identify, I am servant of Krishna, right? And how do you say? And Krishna's pleasure is my purpose. Then one's activities will be as a devotee trying to please Krishna. Okay? So that's the spiritual platform. But that then has to manifest also within our activities. right? Until we're liberated, of course. But so that's why then these things are there, because then in doing that, sometimes then when we come across to the bodily platform, then it's not necessarily natural. Right? Krishna consciousness is the most natural situation and lifestyle there is. There's nothing more normal and natural. Right? Because you actually know who you are, and therefore, and there are directions, so you know what to do. Does that make sense? Other people don't know who they are, so technically they don't know what they're doing. Otherwise, why does fashions and other things change every few years? Why is it, you know, one day they're saying, hell no, we won't go, and the next day they're all waving American flags, and everywhere you see on their cars and houses, there's flags. In one day. Right? So, how does that work? Because they don't have a specific standard, other than, I am the controller and I am the enjoyer. So if I can control and enjoy this way, great. There's an option. I'll control and enjoy over here. Okay. I almost got, you know, bit by a shark scuba diving. So therefore, I will go for skiing. Okay. I almost broke my leg skiing. So then I'll get into motorcycles. Oh, I almost broke my leg there also. So I'll get into chess. You know. But then my head hurts. So I will just watch television. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So, you find where it is you can control and enjoy. This is, it's actually these things in here, if you want to get into, approach it from that level. Because here is, because the inhabitants in that, we dealt from there, but we were on the beginning once. These are all the technical things. You can understand this point. You can actually, from there, expand and apply it into anything in Krishna consciousness, because it's all built on this. Right? It's all built on I and mine. This balance between these two. Because if they're balanced, then you have proper interaction. Right? Two equal things, or something in common that are equal, can be friends. Right? So if you want Sambandha and Prayojana to be friends, so there's Abhideya, then they have to be equal. Does that make sense? So you have to be able to find what is the appropriate sambandha for that situation of prayojana, so therefore what's the activity you must perform. That is self-realization, not something else. These other things are there to give you an indication. Right? Does that make sense? You want to know where something is. Okay. Like, you want to know where the library is. Okay. So, and this, on that side there's windows. See the windows? Okay. Out the windows, you see there's all those green trees there. So if you go right there and kind of go kind of towards the right, and look through maybe, you know, there, then you'll see sticking out there kind of that kind of bricky, pinky, lavendery building. That's the library. So, that side of the room, the windows, the trees, were not actually the point. The point is the building, but you don't know what the building is. You don't know what a building is. I said the building. What building? What's building? You know? But you know what the room is. You know what a window is. You know what a tree is. Then I can point out what the building is. So we don't know what love of God is. We don't know what's all these things are, but we know our material surroundings. The material surroundings are reflections of the original. They don't have the depth of quality. They don't have the substance, you could say, of the original. But they still look and function like the original. This is the mistake. We still are, you know, overcome by impersonalism, that because it's spiritual, it has to act differently than material. Right? And if it's spiritual, then material can't function right. No, material is a reflection of the spiritual. So it, anyway, it's going to function like the spiritual, but on the mundane platform. So now if we function, if we operate it in its same way as the reflection is there, but in a Krishna conscious way, we're actually dealing with the spiritual world. Inferior spiritual world, but spiritual world nonetheless. That's why when the devotees come here from the spiritual world, it's an inconvenience, but they don't see the material world. Because it's all Krishna's energy, and it functions exactly like it does in the spiritual world. Just, it's harder to operate. There's less things you can do with it. You know what I'm saying? You know, does that make sense? So, this is the problem, because in impersonalism, we think that it operates differently. If I have relationships here and they give me trouble, therefore in the spiritual platform, there's no relationships, they don't give me trouble. Right? Here in the material world, you know, lions are big and heavy and nasty and stinky and don't take a bath, and they growl and they eat you. But if you go to heaven, hey, they're cuddly and, you know, they've been regularly bathed by, I think Paul does it himself, and, you know, and they even talk. You know, you can talk with the nice cuddly, right? If you look in the pictures, it's always the little 9-year-old girl that's cuddling with the lion. Right? Not the 40-year-old mother. No, the 8-year-old girl, right? No? So, it's got to be different. But it's not. In operation. But what makes it different is what is our consciousness on I and mine. That means then the consciousness of the endeavor is different. That's why in the beginning then we do these things that look so different. You know, we wear different clothes, we put mud on our face, we get out our mother's, you know, pink bed sheets. We do the whole thing, you know, like that. So we do all those things, then we think, yes, this is spiritual. It is because it's given by God, but it's not actually the spiritual. The spiritual is chanting, associating with devotees, hearing Bhagavatam, worshipping the deity, living in the Dham, developing affection for Krishna. That's spiritual. But we're only going to get there because we can understand things like, okay, religion means it's something different than material, so then you dress different, look different, so then it's what's just like the window. Right? And then I have all these regulations. I get up early in the morning when everybody else goes to bed. When I used to go to bed, that's when I get up. You know, and, you know, I take a cold bath and I do this and that. So many different things. So then it's obvious, yes, I am doing something different that nobody else is doing. Then we can say, yes, I'm spiritual. That's why you see devotees, if they sometimes drop these things, they also, in being, quote unquote, practical, compromise their spiritual life, because for them they only know it because of that, right? But once one has crossed that into you're actually Krishna conscious because you want to please Krishna, right? Then you follow the rules or don't follow the rules, it doesn't matter. But since it doesn't matter, why you wouldn't follow them, since they're God's rules? He likes it. He does it. We read in Dwarka, right? Krishna gets up in the Brahma Muhurta. Right? He's sleeping with the goddess of fortune. You can't get better than that. Right? But he gets up, leaves. She doesn't want him to leave. But he gets up and leaves. Goes, takes his bath, does his yajnas, gives him charity, does the whole thing. That's what he likes to do, right? He wouldn't be doing something he doesn't like to do. That's one thing you gotta get. God does not do things he doesn't like to do. Right? So, therefore, in his pastimes, this is what he likes. He likes getting up and then washing, you know, and brushing your teeth, cleaning your tongue, you know, then afterwards doing these things, taking his bath and then putting tilak and all that. It's what he does. He likes that. Therefore, we fuck. Because in the spiritual world, it's going to be funny that God does one thing and everybody else does something else. You can get by a little bit of that in Vaikuntha. But in Braj, he just wants to, you know, it's, friends means what you do is what they do. What you eat is what they eat. What you dress is what they dress. You talk the same language. You do everything the same. You have the same, you know, you see something, you know, it's like,
all the cowherd boys, and, you know, they're coming back from the fields, and, you know, all these effulgent people come along and, you know, approach Krishna and offer all these funny prayers and languages they don't know. And one of them, you know, hey, check out the guy with 1,000 eyes on his body. Hey, that guy's got 4 heads. And that's nothing. Check out the guy with 5 heads wearing snakes and a deer skin, you know, like that. And hey, that guy's on an elephant. That guy's riding a peacock. Wow. You know, it's like, you know, and then when they all go, then they just sit there and goof and laugh about who are those so funny guys that came, you know. So then, and, you know, so it's just fun. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is that that commonness is what creates rasa. So you have to balance samman and prayojan. Otherwise, there's no question your abhideya will be balanced. Right? You know, what's the typical? Okay, you take the brahmachari. He's the brahmachari. Right? And there's zero concept of interaction. Right? With women. So, what's the activity like? Pleasant? Comfortable? Let's say the hardcore brahmachari is serving the ladies prasad. Wouldn't it have been easier just to put the bucket on the side and go get yourself? Right? Because there's not a balance. So therefore, it doesn't work. But if we put it the other way, you have the guy who's always trying to, you know, get in close with the ladies, and he's serving the shot. Definitely, it would have been better with the bucket over on the side. You know? With probably that guy's head in it, right? Does that make sense? So the point is it's a balance. So the whole concept of the Bhagavad, Pancharatric, and the Vedic is how to create balance. Right? The middle path. The razor's edge means it's in the middle. It's not right, it's not left, it's in the middle. You know what makes sense? So the whole Varnashram system is to create a balance, a social balance. Everybody has a position, but everyone has their limitation. And so, if you don't follow it, it doesn't work. Okay, let's take a typical example. And you could take the word either way you like, you know, grammatically, atypical. Either as one word or two words. You have a temple president, and it's not a nuyaka. And so, therefore, the community members who aren't really that involved and don't take responsibility, but at the same time don't want to get somehow or another controlled by this temple president, then dream up this quote-unquote Vedic thing of Brahminical council. Right? So, now, and what does this Brahminical council do according to the Brahminical councilees? They work out all the management and what the Shudra, now called the temple president, is supposed to do. Anything goes right, they're a great council. Anything goes wrong, it's a stupid temple president. I knew we should have got someone else. Okay. Does it work? Has it worked in any yatra in the world? Has it worked for any multinational company? Has it worked for any family? No, it's an absolute failure. Why? Because it's not Vedic. Kings have Brahminical councils, but the council doesn't have any authority. They can give advice according to their understanding of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. The decision is 101% the king's, the glory is the king's, the blame is the king's. So he doesn't have to listen to them. Same time, they don't have to stick around if he doesn't. That's Vedic. That's balanced. Or, you're the manager, you know, of all you survey, you know. Whatever is under the control of the local mayor, that's my yatra. Right? And as far out as I can get also. You know? So, great. But, there is such a thing as senior Vaishnavas. So you can't just do what you want and disregard Guru Sadhana Shastra. Right? The Vaishya, he can make the money. No one should be telling him how to make the money. Brahmas and Kshatriyas do not know how to make money. I repeat, do not know how to make money. I'll say it one more time. Do not know how to make money. So when it comes to how the Vaishya should make the money, they should keep their mouth shut. Think of any yajna where they don't. Does it make money? No. Like that. So therefore, how to make the money, that's what the Vaishya does. But does the Vaishya get to keep all the money? No. He has to give it to these guys that don't know how to make it. Because they know what to do with it. See, that's the difference. He knows how to make it, and they know what to do with it. Okay? But now to do that, there must be trust. Right? So they've gone to school, they all follow Brahminical culture. Vedic means Brahminical culture, it's not another culture. Like that. There's not such thing as Kshatriya culture, Vaishya culture. No, there's Brahminical culture. There's Kshatriya duties, Vaishya duties. There's those. Varna is different, but ashram, there's only one set of rules. Like that. A Kshatriya is a Brahmachari, and a Vaishya is a Brahmachari, Brahma is a Brahmachari. It's the same rules. They become Grihasthas, it's the same rules. Vanaprastha, it's the same rules. But as occupational duties, there's a difference. Does that make sense? Okay. So then the point is you have to balance I and mind. If I is too strong, it gets thrown out. I'm in charge, I'm this, I'm that, I'm so many things. Think about it. Anybody likes that situation? No. Everything's mine, it's like nothing happens either. Right? Does that make sense? So if you look at it, all problems come down to I and mine. It's either somebody's trying to control an area they shouldn't be controlling in, or there's attachment beyond what is their right. So Varnashram establishes what is your right as far as control and attachment goes. You cross that, and it's social mayhem. That's all. That's what it does. In other words, Varnashram is to establish what is the proper relationship. Who am I? Who is somebody else? And what is our relationship? So it's actually a person. It's a very scientific way to establish how everybody fits into the society and how they can get what they need without creating a problem for anybody else. So when it goes wrong is when somebody's attachment control is out of their area. Right? Like, I would like to, not be so strict on the rules and to get by because, hey, anyway, I'm on the bottom of the pile anyway, so it doesn't matter. Shudra can't lose her caste, so whatever happens, then happens. You know, I'm just a natural guy. Same time, I would like to, be able to economically be independent. I want to be in control of everything that goes on, and I definitely want to be able to tell everybody what to do. And sound great? Sounds like a good varna, right? Okay. And and I like the idea that the lack of responsibility, that it's not my thing, it's somebody else's thing. So if something goes wrong, it's the temple president. So I have that freedom. At the same time, I want to be able to, whatever it is I'm into, I can do on my own. At the same time, as I should kind of have the intimate, emotional and still socio-political clout, of a mature person and the respect and honor and facility of the renunciate. Isn't that every devotee's dream? So, if you've answered yes to the question, you can understand why there's so much social chaos. Because if you think about it, what no one wants to do is tackle the I and mine. I am this and that's it. I am a manager of things, not people. Or I am a manager of people, not things. Or I am a manager but not so much of a leader. Or I'm a leader, but I'm not necessarily good at, you know, administration. Or I'm great at making money, or I can, you know, you got something to do, I can get it done. Who's willing to do that? Guaranteed, the biggest fear probably of most devotees is that. Sit them down and actually say, okay, who are you? No one wants to address. Either there's a social stigma, they're worried that, oh, well, you know, I will drop in my perception of my social standing, or I won't be in control of things that I want to be in control of to guarantee my security and therefore my enjoyment, or I'm just actually afraid of what's in there. And so this is the gross, right? So if you have a problem contemplating that, then you might find on certain levels there'll be problems contemplating the Pancharatrika and the Bhagavat level of the same thing. Though at the same time it's transcendental, so most devotees, they'll accept, I'm a devotee, I'm this, I'm that. Okay, but then apply that in your social life. Does that make sense? So like that, then a difficulty comes up, because generally introspection is not a popular item. Managers definitely don't like it, because if people start to think, then you got trouble, right? You know, any mundane leaders always avoided this. You know, people who talk too much, think too much, they are a problem. You know, because then they tend to confuse others who could do so. In one sense, it's correct, because when there's confusion, then there's not correct moving. But that's because everybody has their own idea. But when there's the Vedic standard, then things can move progressively in that direction. So because there has to be a balance between it, it has to be thought about, but it has to be performed also. You know what I'm saying? You have to perform your duties, but you also have the right to contemplate those duties. You know what I'm saying? So all these things are there. If you think about it, actually any problems are very, very simple. They actually go back to this principle of I am mind, because it is the root of everything. Right? It is the primordial sin. Is I, is envy. There's another definition of I, is envy. I become envious of Krishna because I want to be the enjoyer. Right? Raga bhaya krodha. So bhaya, fear, is fear that I am servant and not God. That's where fear comes from. Right? That's why the devotees are fearless. I'm a devotee, so if I live or die, it doesn't matter. Because I'm the same person now, and when I leave this body, I'll still be the same entity. So there's no fear. There's no unknown. There's no insecurity. So impersonalism means insecurity. So then, that's there. So then attachment comes up, and when there's frustration in attachment, then there's anger. So the problem in Sambandha is envy, the problem in Prayojana is attachment, and the problem in Abhideya is anger. So these are the primordial sins. That's why I'm saying you can take everything back to this. That was what we meant by the statement. Any problems that any individual has, or any yatra or anything has, go back to these two things of I and mine. There's an imbalance there. You correct that balance by proper understanding, Krishna conscious understanding and application of the philosophy and culture, problem goes away. Problem won't go away. The karmis, because they don't have these things, but amongst the devotees, then it will. Right? It's much easier to fight something outside than inside. Is there's nothing that doesn't go back to these points. Does that make sense?
to go back to austerity is something that everyone has this limit. Is it important to know what is your limit and to go to it? Or is it not important?
No, it means part of self-realization is knowing your limit. So it means you shouldn't be, in other words, you shouldn't do less. It's just like when you eat. You don't eat more than what you should, but you shouldn't eat less. Right? Krishna says in the Gita, balance in work and recreation. So you shouldn't work more than what should be done. At the same time, you shouldn't work less or recreate more or less. Right? So everything has to be balanced. So then, but the point of the festival is because what is your limit is what you can do. But what you would generally choose as a daily platform will generally be less than the limit. Right? You know, you will consider that a balance between the limit and, you know, laziness. So the festivals give an opportunity to push that limit. And many times then, if you come up to that edge, what is comfortable, means whatever's your edge, then with time you see that that edge is actually can go farther. Like that. So that way then you increase what is your normal, standard, daily sadhana.
But is that important?
It is important, yes. Because Krishna is always trying to mean spiritual means it increases.
Krishna likes that.
Yeah, because Prabhupada mentions that you're either progressing or you're regressing. There's no such thing. Oh, I'll just sit here in the middle. It means you throw a ball, it's either going up or it's going down. It's not just hanging there. It can't. So, therefore, we see in the pastimes, Krishna is also trying to progress. That's why he leaves the rasa dance, so that. Because otherwise, here you have the most qualified girls in the cosmic creation. Not universe, cosmic creation. They can dance with Krishna. The queens of Dwarka can't do that. So these are girls, and they haven't even attained ultimate perfection. They're out there dancing with Krishna. So they're not normal. But they become proud of that. But Krishna's not proud of being God. So how is he going to hang out with somebody who's, you know, he's... In other words, an exceedingly wealthy or powerful person or famous person likes being with other people like that because then they can just, it's normal, they don't have to profile, they can just relax, they can be normal. You know? They can sit down and do the stupidest things because they're two billionaires and they don't have to prove that they're billionaires. Does that make sense? So, Krishna's always pushing that to go, but only within what you can do. Maya never gives you a test that you can't pass. That's not her job. Her job is not to keep you in Maya. Her job is to keep you from pestering Krishna. You know? Does that make sense?
When you are thinking about what you said, it's better to absorb in your duty than to absorb in pushing yourself to certain limits and meditate on the spirit. These are better you to meditate on.
The point is that if you're doing austerity, so austerity should be part of your service. I'm saying if it's there, let us say Janmashtami, so we fast on Janmashtami. So it's part of our service to perform the austerity. So we already have austerity written in. Right? Chanting, following the regulative principles, following the sadhana, following the festivals and all that, performing our particular services that we do, interacting properly with devotees, you know, according to the directions given by the acharyas, you know, humility, tolerance, respect, you know, respecting others. That's already austerity. Austerity doesn't mean physical. That's physical austerity. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So a word tends to get a connotation, and because of this, then we also by habit, have problems with that. You know what I'm saying? So we develop, due to our mundane perspective, then words take on certain connotations or even become buzzwords and become platforms for our own personal, you know, issues. But reality may be something completely different. You know what I'm saying? So when a word is said, when we say austerity, austerity simply means performing activities that are for one's progress and development. Right? That's why for the student, to study is their austerity. It's for their development. Right? The austerity, and the next is for the women to be satisfied and the men to be sensitive to the needs of the women. That's the austerity. They perform that, it works. What they're looking for, they get. Right? The austerity of the vanaprastha, they're more get down to the physical senses and ego and things like that, the more gross things. Because they can afford to. They've already done all those things. They're old enough. They don't do it. No one's going to complain. Right? You're 50 years old. You don't wear a nice sari. No one's going to go, what's her, what's wrong with her? Right? But if you're 20 or 30 and you do that, you go, oh, husband doesn't take care of this or that, or something's going wrong, or she hates the husband. Something will be there, right? But if she's older, no one's going to say anything. So you can afford to. Like that. It means you can't be too physically austere in the grihastha ashram. People will freak. Because then, you know, it's a matter of, it's all kind of one entity. It means men are very distinct individuals. And they don't actually really relate with the other. It means you can bring up a few things, they can understand where you're at, and that's it. That's all the far. But it's not that they emote as one entity. Women do. You have a room full of women, and there's a feeling they all won't get the same feeling. You can see it. You know, you have a whole crowd of men. One starts to dance this way and that way. Others will start to dance, but doing their own thing. So he'll inspire them to dance, but they'll do their own thing. The whole group of women, one woman starts to dance like that. All the women do like that within a split second. And they're already at the back. You can't even see the woman in the front. But the hands are all going the same way. Right? So grihastha means women. That means, you know, everybody does this, and we got to do this. So nobody likes it too fanatic, too less. That's the meaning of community. Community means common value. You know, brahmacharis can be because there's no women. They can be austere, no problem, because there's no women. Does that make sense? So, but the point is it doesn't mean here that a woman can't be austere when she's in that position. But that's where it comes naturally. She can do it before that, but then that's called Brahmins. They can also do it and get away with it. A Brahmin woman has less stuff and be more sodden and everything because there's no trip. So nobody minds. She's not pulling any trip, therefore no one does reciprocates with her that way. But, you know, Kshatriya, this, that, they're always trying to prove themselves and they're superior, so therefore she's wearing something less, oh, there's a weakness, you can nail her on. You know, she thinks she's so big that she can't even dress. What's that? Means, it may sound funny, because I guarantee, nobody will talk like this. But we're talking like this, because it's going on today. It's going on right now, this second. Right? When I walk into Darshan Arti, I see social profiling, this, that. It's a whole amazing psychological phenomenon going on. You know, it's not 100 devotees just taking Darshan of deities. Oh, there's so much going on. Nobody talks about it, because it's one of those things you don't want to talk about. But my point is I feel we've reached a point in our society, we don't start talking about it, then, you know, we're going to have continue with the same problems we have today. We have to address who we are and start to recognize that I do have a pattern of thought and behavior and inclinations. And if I do those well, you know, in other words, and with those come a body of facilities and restrictions. And if I accept that, I will fit into the social structure nicely. And I will be happy. And then I don't have any trips and I can therefore focus on Krishna. Does that make sense? So the physical austerity, if that works, then it's very nice. It's a recommendation of the Shastra. Yeah, it can be. But it should be within what's it? Fasting. Let us take what would be austerities if we wanted to take it more to the limit within, you know, Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Properly fasting on the fast days. How you say, if you want to do more, do without water, but it's not important. Only near jhalas there. If the other ones you drink, that's okay. But if not, then that takes it a little bit more. Increasing our, you know, sadhana, increasing the quality of the sadhana. Being very, focused on being humble, tolerant. There's tons of opportunities for that to come up. Always trying to do the work to the best of our ability, never trying to do it anything less. Always working for the benefit of whatever it is we're working for. The particular person or department or yatra or like that. Trying to understand the mood of that. Right? These are what we describe it that are called chastity. So those function for brahmacharis, devotees, shudras, and women. Same principle. If one is in a position and one can do, eat once a day. Eating once a day means eating grains once a day. It can mean you only ingest foodstuffs once a day, but it can also mean you only ingest grains once a day, and you may at other times take, you know, milk, fruit, like that. Generally more milk, fruit, less like that. Does that make sense? Decreasing,
Simple life.
Yeah, simple life. In other words, how much you need, only keep that. Don't keep more. You need 10 saris, keep 10. You need 25, you keep 25. You don't keep 26.
The problem is the money.
Therefore, you have to find a balance. First of all, is figure out what do you need it for. Why do you have saris? Right? What are you doing with them? Why do you need them? So there's the aesthetic value, and then there's the, how you say, the sophistication value. So, and then, yeah, and then you could say the social value for those who like that. So you have aesthetics, you have social, you have sophistication. Within that, you have to understand what is your. So that you can have, you know, five white saris that are interchangeable, but you wear them very well because you're sophisticated. But you don't need to get into the social scene. You don't need to get into the aesthetics. So for you, the sophistication is the aesthetics. It's worn well. It's aesthetic, rather than it's got nice colors or booties or jari or this or that, right? But if those things are important, you like colors, you like this, use them. Because then, if you don't, you don't feel confident. Full colors for a woman give confidence. Like that. That's why you see is generally they're full. We wear these white. So most of our women wear what's technically is widow's clothes. Like that. If it's predominantly white with some other things in it, it's what widows wear. In Bengal, they wear pure white. Some of the places they wear pure white, but in most they wear it's white with some border and some booty and some this and that, but it's white predominantly. But that's what a lot of our ladies wear. But it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? They keep it simple. But the full colors gives confidence. But that's there because there's a man there. There's no man, there's no need for that kind of confidence. So therefore, one tends to wear more bland stuff. You know, so if one needs it, one does it. If one needs it, variety, great. If you have the facility, then why not? But you have to know, you have to take care of it. You want, you know, 250 saris, but you have to take care of them. You know, you don't take care of them, they will mold. The bugs will eat them. You know? So you have to work. You want a big house, yeah, who's going to clean it? You know, you want nice food, yeah, who's going to cook it? So it's fine. So in other words, it creates work. The whole point in the process is to create activity, get one out of ignorance into activity. So, you know, you want 50 fancy saris, then that means you got to work for it. You got to get the money, you got to go out and buy them, you have to maintain them, you have to wear them, you have to think a million times, oh, I just wore that one, you know, last week, and we went to this person's house, I wore that, and 2 years ago I wore this one, I can't wear that one. So that's work. So you have to work, you have to be active. Right? So that's the whole point, is you're active. So if you need that, have it. Because you have it, and it means, in other words, you want it, the facility is available, take it. Facility is not available, be satisfied with whatever comes. You're not interested, don't take it. If a facility comes and you're neutral, you're not really interested, but it comes and you could take it, then take it. It came. But if it's not coming, don't endeavor for it. Then one has to practice satisfaction. I want 200 saris, I only got 50. Be satisfied.
Can I ask one question about something that sometimes bothers me for austerity? Is when it's cold and you walk barefoot on the cold marble, then I think all this poor boys in it, that have a stomach.
Don't worry. Being said, boys have cast iron stomachs, so I wouldn't worry about that. You know?
You know, so. Is it not sometimes?
See, the thing is there is one has to always remember, boys thrive in austerity, because austerity is that kind of thing is more, you're talking about control, because austerity means control. So that means I means masculine. It means that's where the men thrive. Women don't thrive in austerity. That's why the women's austerity, like you see, man's quality has to have sense controlled and be sensitive. It doesn't mention sense control for women. It says chastity, means their senses are active but focused. The man is sense controlled. There's a difference. A big difference. Because the woman is moving wherever her senses want to go. I want to cook this, I want to do this, I want to eat that, like that. And the man has to be controlled in his senses, because otherwise how he's going to survive that. And he has to be sensitive that this is the needs what the woman wants. So therefore, he reciprocates with that. That's what I was talking before. That is the practical material application of what I talked before about Krishna and God as the person, male, and us as a female. Because that's what I'm saying. It's the male, so they have to follow the same padati. But man wants the woman to do this or do that. That's female. That's what women want. They decide the man's going to do this, the man's going to do that. And he's got to adjust with it immediately. And if he doesn't adjust in that nanosecond, then there's trouble. Right? So that's why the man just reciprocates whatever the woman's doing. But the facility and the standards are created by the man. But within that, what's going to happen from one moment to the next, that's up to the woman. So that's how you have to know what is the masculine, what is the feminine. That's why things don't work. The women act like men, the men act like women. It can't work. How would it work? So the whole point is if you understand Krishna consciousness, your material life goes fine also. The Pandavas had a fine life. Right? One of the prayers in here, the first canto. he's saying is that by Krishna's grace, and we had, you know, our power, our opulence, our wives, our position, our, because it was all in connection with Krishna, so it worked. They understood this principle of I and mine. What is masculine and feminine?
Like in the old days, you were a lot more into austerity and simple life than nowadays.
That's fine, and it will come again. Don't worry. Once the first generation dies off, things will start to become, look up. Like that. You understand? Because they don't want it to be too fanatic. You know, been there, done that. You know? What is it? Is that the famous adage, once leaving, one never returns again? Once having done it, one never does it again. Isn't that the... No. What I'm saying, isn't that our Krishna conscious point? So, in other words, that is there. That can be there. But the point is devotees have developed and sophistized or something their material life, but they haven't done that to their spiritual life. When you hear most devotees talk, they're still talking 26th Second Avenue, you know, maturity of Krishna consciousness. The principles that are given then are the principles, but the detail, they don't want detail. They don't want to hear anything more. They don't want to hear, I have to endeavor more, I have to contemplate, or I have to improve. No, I chant my 16 rounds, I went to the temple, I put on my dhoti to go to the temple, and hey, give me a break, get out of my face. They don't want to hear more. But when it comes to material life, hey, I got a million books on this and can quote from here and there, and this one said this and that one that, and you know, this quadrant and that, you know, this hat, and you know, so many things are there that, you know. Faith. Because faith means that nine levels of devotional service are based on faith. Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya. So faith increases in Sadhu Sangha. Then Sadhu Sangha and faith increase in Bhajana Kriya. Then Sadhu Sangha, faith and Bhajana Kriya increase in Nishtha. So each one, it keeps going. So that means faith is increased. So Prabhupada gives a definition of prema as mature faith. So if devotees don't have faith, that's the foundation. So that's why it just devotional service disappears. But you see, as soon as you put that, but it's still that senior devotee who is not much practicing because he doesn't have faith, is still way different than the neophyte devotee who's very enthusiastic and absorbed. Because if you can instill faith in that senior man, in that moment, he's back where he was. Like that. That's a very important Vaishnav tenet that is completely opposed, actually militates against the modern Protestant concept of eternal damnation. And as long as devotees work on that principle, you don't have Vaishnav society. An iron can go back in the fire. It's a physical fact. The iron can go in the fire, it can be taken out. You can do it unlimited times. This idea, once it's gone out, it's eternally damned. That's for faithless people. Why do religions, modern religions, have to have a thing of eternal damnation? Because the faith is so small. It's so small that if anybody else could get away with nonsense and actually be redeemed, hey, I'm getting into the nonsense too. So to avoid that, that's why this particular tenet is given. But it has nothing to do with Vaishnavism. Right? You know, we're talking about, you know, this guy was He was the temple president, and he was, you know, too controlling and that, and upset people's lives and all this and that. Hey, Jack, how many cows did you eat? One cow? You want to talk morality. One cow, how many hairs in his body? On our head, there's about 100,000 hairs. Right? So, you know, it's a patch about this big. A cow is a little bit bigger than that. So you're talking about tens of hundreds, you're talking about millions of births for one cow. How many cows? So we want to talk morality? Jack, let's talk morality. You know that you become a vegetarian. It's not until your grandchildren that the impurity of your being a meat eater leaves them. That's how it takes 2.5 generations to purify the genes of meat eating. Actually, probably the third generation is what's special. Because they will actually be, to them, human life will be reality. Yes, they will be one. So if we want to talk morality, hey, let's get down and talk. But because we've accepted these other things, and hey, okay. Because if you accept the eternal damnation, great. But that means we've written off the Veda. That's how it works. But as soon as you bring in the Veda, there's a problem. Because the Vedic, you have to think, you have to consider its time, place, and circumstance. Vedic's the real time, place, and circumstance. Modern is just what's in front of me right now, I do. It's just reaction. So, the point is austerity is fine, and if one is into it, do it. But if one is not here, let's look at it this way also. Okay, Prabhupada comes to America. He starts off 64 rounds, chanting this, that. So he came in with Bhagavat. They're just going to chant 64 rounds to Harinam Sankirtan, take prasad, bus. Nothing else. You don't need anything else. Okay, that went great until Prabhupada figured out that, you know, without the regulation, they're not manifesting. I saw then, I think it was 1970. He had the fun in New Vrindavan. Yeah, so then he figured out, okay, we need a little more Pancharatra here. So then he started the Mangalartik and all these regulative things, because otherwise they weren't becoming purified in the way that they should. Because they weren't absorbed enough in the Bhagavad, because Bhagavad started out with 64, then 32, and okay, 16. That means then full-time preaching and service. Great. But then so much, you know, mundane friction, so then Pancharatra will control that and keep us away from sinful activities. But it doesn't address, Pancharatra is not in the economics and very elaborate household life. Right? So then that was running. And then you could see Prabhupada started talking about we have to introduce Varnashram. Why? Because devotees are, you know, strongly set on their material needs. So, therefore, how that was, you may or may not see the whole of society doing. Part of the society can. The one time everyone was doing it because they were working on that Bhagavata Pancharatra platform. But now the Varnashram aspect needs to be introduced, but devotees don't want to accept it because that means self-realization, means I got to think. And thinking is the last thing people want to do. I can think about money, but think about who I am. Just like this. Okay, here's a little, just take a simple point. You know? A 10-second test. So we're talking about prominence. We're not talking about that one doesn't do other things. But the prominence, because in Vedic, the concept is what is the prominence is what you call it, right? If it's more red in a color, you'll call it a variety of red. It may have some blue in it, but it's more red. If it's got more blue, you call it blue. It's got, you understand? So, we're talking about prominence. So, is studying the scriptures, teaching the scriptures, dealing with the deities, you know, directly like this, is that our preaching? Is that our main service? or is administration and, you know, these kind of leading the community and seeing that everything's going on, everybody's performing their duties properly, right? Or are we generating economics? Or are we helping those other three? Are we working for somebody? Right? I guarantee you, every devotee could answer that question right this second. And I guarantee you, nobody will. Right? Big questions going on. What Varna am I? That's it. It's a 10-second test. Ashram is just as simple. Are you married? You want to be married. Were you married? You know, been there, done that. Okay. That's the point. Varnashram is so simple because everybody's got to be able to follow it. So it can't be complicated. But within it, then, depending upon the sophistication of the individual, it can become more and more complex. Just like dress, you can have a simple dress. You can put on your t-shirt and your jeans. Okay. More sophisticated. Okay, they put on the fancy belt. Okay, more than that. And they put on some other thing, this and that, some, you keep going. But there's some basic outfit. Does that make sense? So the basic outfit is easy. Then immediately, why is the fight? Because everybody wants to be in control and everyone wants to enjoy. And the shudra is definitely not in control. You know, and the vaishya is, okay, I got the money, I should be in control. I made it, so I should spend it. You know? And, you know, it just goes on. The Brahmins, you know, what are they doing? What's so important about that? Without money, you know, what is it? Money talks, nobody walks, right? You know, it's like that. So money talks. Brahmins, who cares about them talking? So, you know what I'm saying? So, that's the point. I've had devotees tell me, who are rich, they say, I get done whatever I want because I got money. They're not proud of it, but they just say, I go into community and say, I have this idea for a project. And everyone goes, yes, sir. And they say, but 10 years before when I didn't have money, nobody cared about me. You have money, you make money, hey. We need money, but that doesn't mean that that's exclusive. So that's the whole point is, okay, now we've figured that out, but we don't want to go past, we don't want to approach that point because the next thing is who's in control and who's actually going to get the facilities. Because that's what's actually important to us, that's why we can't operate on ashram. Because we want to secure our facilities. Because why? We don't trust other people. Why? Because we haven't been dealt with according to Varnashram principles, so we actually don't know what a real human relationship is. I was shocked the other day. I was in a class, there were 24 people in the class. I asked, has anybody ever had or has a relationship or an experience where you have someone you trust, you know, you can speak anything, it's free, like that? 4 out of 24 raised their hands. 4. I was shocked. I thought that was common. I was just pointing it out so people would kind of like, you know, understand the drift I was taking. I didn't understand I was dealing with people who have not experienced human emotions. And that's who's come to my accord. I've heard of people that are talking about, yes, you know, Krishna's Supreme Father. And one guy goes, what's a father? I don't understand. I mean, I know people have a father, but he never had one. And it just doesn't make any sense. So you can't use the thing, you know, he's the Supreme Father, he cares, he loves you. It's like, yeah, so, you know, it's like that. And so it's, so, and therefore they don't trust anybody. So, relationship means trust. It means if you have some, how you say, desire to interact, then when that desire increases, then it crosses reason. This is very important to understand. Because then it becomes attachment. But that means it's crossed reason. That's why people who are attached aren't reasonable. It's just psychologically the way it has to be. So when you cross from the sambandha over to prayojana, the attachment, it means you have to cross over avideya, which is knowledge. That's why the mother is like, the guy is, you know, you know, the top wanted gangster in America because he's nice to his mother. He asked his mother, you know, if you know anything strange. Oh no, he's such a nice boy. He loves his mother. You know, he takes care. And it's because of affection. You say he's the number one criminal and all that. She doesn't care. You know, he comes home and he, you know, says something nice to his mother. So she doesn't care. Because attachment is going to, when attachment is there, when it increases, then there's consideration. Big point. When there's consideration, there's confidence. This thing that I'm quoting here, this is directly Rupa Goswami. So this, I didn't take this out of some modern book. Right? So no need to doubt it. So if there is. So that needs confidence. So the reason there's no confidence is because there's been no consideration. And if there's no consideration, you definitely think there's no attachment. If there's no attachment, then there's no affection.
You can see the Prabhupada, how he built.
Yeah, so therefore, devotees would do anything for Prabhupada, go anywhere in that, because they were fully confident, because he was considerate. But because we want to be the controllers, then the point is you're the temple president, you are in control. You don't have to prove it. So therefore, you just do what you're supposed to do. And if somebody doesn't agree, then you have to tell them, hey, go to another temple. Here's the money. I once asked one temple president, somebody would show up at his temple that didn't belong there. And he would give them money to go, and he would say, where are you going from here? And they'd say, and he'd give them the money, cash. Say, you know, after breakfast, you're out of here. And then I've seen the same person come back, you know, some months later, and then he'd give them the money and send them off the other direction. I asked him, why do you do that? Why do you waste the money? So if they stay here, they don't fit in. They'll just make trouble, be this and that, like that. So just because they had, whatever it was, the most consistent, pleasant temple I've seen. Like that. Because he knew what kind of person fit into what they were doing there. Because they were a particular kind of preaching temple. And you weren't that, then, you know, and so where do you want to go? So, you know, they're devotees, and you take, they go. So, you know, so you can commit because you know you'll be taken care of. But at the same time as then there's the elements of honor, taken care of according to what? Not according to what you think, but according to what you deserve. Right? So, like I was saying, I remember once it was like this, someone was complaining, I'm sick in the ashram and I'm not being taken care of. Right? One of the Indian devotees then said, what do you mean by not taken care of? You mean taken care of like your mother takes care of you? Like your sister takes care of you? Your brother takes care of you? This, he listed off this whole long list. Which one do you mean? Right? You're in a room, it's clean, you're getting food, you're getting this. Okay, no one's coming over and go, oh, poor little No one's doing that. Okay, so if you want that, hey, don't be sick in the ashram. Go home. Mom will take care of you. You want to be in the ashram, the boys take care of you. They don't take care of you, that's something to complain about. You know, at least there should be that brotherly affection, but don't expect motherly affection from the boys. So that's the whole thing, you know. You're old, you're doing nothing, you know, you took care of your family, you fed them, you did everything like that, so that's nice. They should take care of you and for your facilities. But it doesn't necessarily mean facilities, because now they run the business, they make the decisions, they pay the bills, so they got to see what it, you can't make those decisions. You can recommend, you can't. So you may say, well, that's humiliating, isn't it? That's why people before, when they took on a prostitute, left the house. To avoid being humiliated. So that's the point, is that the Ardha Kukuta Nyaya, half a chicken, we only want the half that gives the golden egg, or say, duck, sorry, whatever, some variety of bird gives the golden eggs. Let's say, you understand? We don't want to take the other half. Why is, we want a now, if you look at it, the various bureaucracies we've created, they all have authority, but do any of them have responsibility? No. That's the beauty of a committee. It has authority, but no responsibility. Because if you come to them, hey, why didn't you, you know, why are you guys doing this? It wasn't me. Hey, I abstained on it. You know, those guys voted on it. I don't know. And you can go around the room, and it's rare that you ever have someone who'll say yes. I only know a couple of boys like that. And Bobby Ryan's one like that. He'll say, yes, I'm doing it because this is what I think. Most of the others in that committee, no. There's a few like that. They will say, you know, this, you know, yeah, I made that decision, I stand by it. You know, if you have something to say, let's consider it. But that's leaders. That's leadership. The committee is a way to hide. So I have authority, but no responsibility, but the two go together. That's why nobody cares for the committee. Why? Because it's not taking responsibility. The parent takes responsibility for you, therefore the children care. They only have authority and no responsibility. They do not care. Right? Mother comes in and slaps the kids around and says, do this, do that, and then is off doing whatever she does is never around. Those kids don't care. So the more responsible you are, the more they care. So these are very, very simple social formulas. Like that. They're all given in the Shastra. That's why we use a Purana, because the same examples again and again and again in different situations are different. Right? Priyavrata Maharaj. He wants to establish the next person on the throne. So he checks if his ministers are interested. His ministers are the senior people. They're interested in Dhruva. Then they like it. Then he talks, he himself is satisfied, and then he talks to, then he finds out if the masses are interested. Right? Then he puts them on the throne. Swayambhuva Manu wants to marry his daughter, Devahuti. He's checked, he's satisfied that Kardama is the right man, but he wants his wife, who's the senior, and the mass, the daughter, to be satisfied. So then he says, same person. So that's the point. The formula works. It's just a matter of having faith that it's there. You know, it comes in a fancy book with a guy with a bald head. Okay, great. But if he has a sikha on the back of his head, forget it. So that's the whole point is the Vedas are perfect. We're imperfect. If we don't apply imperfect, we can't complain. If we get cut by a knife, we can't blame the knife. Does that make sense? Okay? Okay, last one. You have a point. Yeah. There's two choices. It can be completely blank or it can have a light in it. You know, it's with the light on or without the light on. You know, sometimes you go into your room and you leave the lights on, sometimes you want to turn them off when you want to be alone. Because they're more impersonal. Nirvisesha shunyavadi paschatya desha tarane. It doesn't say bharata desha tarane. It says paschatya desha tarane. You understand? Westerners, by default, are impersonal. Their religions are impersonal. There is no Western personal philosophy. Right? They claim there's God, but what does it look like? Oh, he's no form. They're all like that. They talk about the ones that were really into God as a person developing a conjugal relationship or a nice relationship with God, they all, you know, went up in smoke. Like that. You know what I'm saying? So the church very nicely whittled it down to those who are very happy with God's a person, but if you ask who he is, oh, he doesn't, you know, there's no form, there's no qualities, there's no nothing. So that's the foundation of it. Modern culture is based on Protestantism. Right? The modern economics and social structure can't function on Judaism, Christianity, or Islam. Right? Like you see, it's a big problem with these communities and the very cutting-edge modern think. Right? They're the ones creating them. They're the terrorists, right? Because they can't relate to this thing. Because Protestant means it's whatever I want to do. There are no rules. There is no authority. There are no saintly persons. There is no standard. That's Protestant. It wasn't what it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be reformed, you know, Catholicism, but it didn't end up that way. So the modern social system that you need is only because you didn't see it before. You can say, oh, it's modern. No, it's only because Protestantism is there. It can flourish. Before it couldn't, because either Catholicism, Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, something else is there, so you couldn't have the same thing flourish. Right? Does that make sense? You know?
So in practice, how can the individuals in person, is there a step of the three that we need to deal with this?
Appreciate the devotees and their qualities. Appreciate God as a person. And he likes devotees because they have qualities. Do you know what I'm saying? You know, devotees are, it's nice. They have their quirks, and we have our quirks. You know, so you try to find a situation that you can, that situate that's easy for you, and then within that try to be open with the devotees that are there and just, you know, state your position. In other words, everybody needs to interact, so it's not that you don't want to interact, you just want to interact when you want to. But there's times when you don't want to, but somebody else wants to. So you have to work out what you do then. It's not that they're wrong, because there's time when you want to and they're not into it. So it's not about us, it's about the relationship. We are part of the relationship. If we are the relationship, that means you don't need someone else, that's off and on. Which generally means impersonal. God's off and on, but he is a person, so he's not impersonal. We are. Does that make sense? So, that's the point. You want relationships with others, that means then at least 50% you have to adjust to them. At least 50%. Then it'll work. If you 50, they 50, it will work. And then the more you increase it, the deeper we get. If you're 100%, they're 100%, it works. If you're 50 and they're 100, it's a problem. So as it goes, then as you approach the line, it comes to 50, but as you cross the line going to 60, the other 60, 70, 70, 80, 80, okay. And it's balanced. We have a fear of surrender. We have a fear of losing control, or a fear of being exploited. So we're always trying to establish that, and we don't want it to be otherwise. That's why we always want to be in control. But what's wrong with it? You know what I'm saying? What's wrong with we're nice? Krishna, he's God, but they want to play a particular game. Krishna plays it. He doesn't go, well, I'm God, I choose the game. You know what I'm saying? We're afraid of that. We're afraid of actually being submissive. Why? Because we've been submissive and people haven't taken care of our emotions. But if you want to become a personalist, you have to take the risk. Right? I want to make money, I have to be able to risk money. I want knowledge, I have to be able to risk that. Whatever is the area, I have to take that risk. No? So if you want relationships, you have to take the risk that you might be hurt. Just like the businessman, he might lose money. But it's worth it. Yes? Okay. The other one?
John was asking because he made a statement in the beginning before this coming day, you said discrimination to choose their spiritual master, and then at that point you give up discrimination and you blindly follow. And that was so sure about this feeling.
Blindly means you've accepted it, so you got to live with it. Means if there's anything wrong, you can't blame the guru. Because you chose him. Right? So therefore, if he's giving instructions that are valid, you follow them. You may like them, you may not like them. But what he says is according to Guru Sadhuri Shastra, and you've accepted it, so hey. Does that make sense? In other words, it's responsibility. People don't want to take responsibility. Point is, if you're not willing to surrender that much, don't take initiation. It's just like, why get married if you're not willing to make it work? Right? You chose the person. It didn't work. Hey, you're the bozo. Blind. It means blind is here. Blind is the buzzword here. That's what I talked about before. Because what I explained, I meant what blind, I already defined what blind meant. But you have a very specific meaning of blind. Blind means no discrimination, complete idiot, going along with the flow, no brains, no determination, no self-assertion. Just completely a puppet in the hands of those who control and exploit. Okay? So that's your definition, but I gave what my definition was. Is taking responsibility for your decision. It's just like this. Okay. Let us just say you have, you know, it's a good example, it's not politically correct and people don't like it, but I'm going to use it anyway because I couldn't care less. You have an army. And you have officers. You've chose to join the army. You've enlisted to be, a armed forces person. That's your career. You have people above you. You may like the person, you may not like the person, but what he says is what you do. And it works. You don't like the guy. The guy's a weirdo. He drinks too much. He's gay. You know, he's nasty. But he knows what to do on the battlefield. You do it, you win, you live. You don't do it, you get killed. So I do it. Right? So you have to see, does this person say what he says helps me in spiritual life? Is this based on siksha? It's not based on, oh, he smiled at me, or he looks cute, or he looks this, or he looks fat. Because those things change. May change, may not change. Like that. You know what I'm saying? May not change, may change. But it's what they speak. Am I, by following it, progressing in Krishna consciousness? That's initiation. It's based on siksha. The siksha works? Great. If you find out that they have some weird something, you know, like that, they like to, you know, hold themselves up in some, you know, mountain house and they don't come out and see people, you know, whatever. But their instructions work. What they've given you before works, and when you talk to them now, it works. So then you don't worry about that they live in a cave. Does this make sense? So you have to understand what is initiation. Initiation wasn't a fire sacrifice. Initiation is accepting to follow their instructions as you lay this whole instructions. The whole thing's instructions. The whole point in the Vedic culture is to develop a siksha relationship with the guru. And if it matures enough, you take initiation. If it doesn't, you just leave it at whatever level of siksha it functions at. And that person, that it comes to that level, then you accept. Yeah, Guru Sadhana Shastra. I'm saying it's according to Guru Sadhana Shastra. If they leave that, then they're not functioning on the platform of Guru. So then it's not, then you don't have obligation. Does that make sense? Then the obligation's not there. But if at some point in the future they are functioning in that way again, then we're again to follow. So that's the point. Is it, if it's according, then it's there. So when Jananivas is saying blindly flowing, he's talking about when both parties are fully properly practicing. He's not talking about one party not practicing properly. Right? So you have to see it in context of what he's describing. Right? Because if you're describing if there's a problem with the guru, that's a specific discussion. That's not a general discussion. General discussion is what is guru, what is disciple, what's relationship. You know, specific is that if there's a problem with one or the other, what are the duties? Like that. It's a secondary point. Does that make sense? So you have to distinguish between.
And it's
what
I have to do is that you was making this point that when you have affection for a spiritual master,
then you have
affection.
Uh-huh.
Then you can have anything and everything.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it comes naturally.
Yeah.
If you don't have affection, but you know it's right, then you can follow also. Out of duty, you can follow also. That's why I'm saying, don't start the relationship with Guru based simply on external affection. Because affections of conditioned souls is flexible. Right? It's not. If the instructions are there and that works, and from that an affection grows, then that's natural. That's good. But it shouldn't just start that, you know, they were talking to a friend and they said something funny and they smiled and they turned their head and just happened to make eye contact with you when they were smiling, and then you go back, oh, he smiled at me and he's my guru, this and that. Like that. I mean, there are major, vast sections of the planet that function like this. Like that. Like that. One of the best answers I got for someone who preached in that area and knows that, then when someone came up and asked him that, because he smiled, then he said, oh, I'm sorry, I can't initiate you, and like that. He says, why not? He says, oh, my wife said, she said I can't. So then immediately they just drop everything. Another one told me, whatever you do, don't smile. So you go there, do not smile. So, huh? The shoe fits, you know? I mean, I wouldn't want to say anything specific, but it is, I think, the largest kind of inland mass yatra in the world. But whatever. So we were saying, you understand? Yeah, so in other words, it's based on shiksha, that's based on intelligence. From intelligence, then it matures where the mind is then comfortable, so then the emotions and everything come out of that. If you just dive into it with the emotions, then because the intelligence is not involved, you may find it doesn't work out quite how you want. Right? So in other words, the intelligence has to decide what is good for the mind, and the mind chooses from that, right? Because the intelligence is the husband, the mind is the wife. So already it's like these are the options that are good and Krishna conscious. Now the mind can choose from that what it wants. But if the mind says this is what I want and uses the intelligence to get it, then you'll find you'll always suffer. You'll always have problems. Right? No wife likes it if she's running the husband around. Right? don't like it. She wants to feel like domesticated and have control within the sphere that he's set, but they have to feel there is a sphere set. There are standards. There is a line. You understand? That's the way we are. The women are like that. Kids are like that. Horses are like that. You know? They're always pushing. You know? You go into a classroom, the teacher, that the boundary is not clear, the kids are always pushing the line. But if it's very clear what the boundaries are, the kids don't. Because the mind is peaceful when it's goodness. There's no passion, there's no ignorance. So that's why the more controlled, the more regulated, the more all these different things is the environment, then you see the women. Because they don't know this science, then they're unhappy because it's not there, so their solution is to do more of what doesn't make them happy and take it more and more and more, and they think that's... Because when they're not happy, then they start to think like a man. So then they want to do that. And then it goes off. It doesn't work. Because if it's two men, then they should both think like men also. And men don't get so trippy. Right? So therefore, if it's man and woman, then there are methods. If it's woman and woman, then there are methods. Women can talk amongst women about things that men never talk about with men. They get down into the funniest things. They're just, men won't talk about that. But that same conversation cannot be had if there's any man. Unless he's gay. Then it's no problem. You understand? In other words, you have to understand who you are and what is your position. Right? You're a disciple. That's your disciple. You're not the guru. You're the disciple. So what does that mean? What do you do? These are your obligations. You accept that, it works. You don't accept that, it won't work. And because siksha is the main thing, therefore if siksha is not functioning in one place because the guru is not functioning properly on the siksha platform, like that, then you find siksha somewhere else where it is appreciated. But that doesn't mean that the diksha connection has to change. You know what I'm saying? Because technically you've been connected. What keeps the diksha connection alive is the siksha. So typically it should come from the diksha guru. And that keeps the diksha alive. But if it doesn't, siksha doesn't come from the diksha guru, if it comes from someone else, it still keeps the diksha connection alive. May not be a popular understanding, but this is Pancharatra. Right? Ever heard of any couple breaking up because the priest that did the marriage blew? Name one. But because he blooped, are they now not married? Let us push the envelope here. What if that priest who did the marriage wasn't following the regular principles? I mean, at the marriage ceremony, definitely was. Are you still married? That's actually how simple our philosophy is. But we make it very, very, very complicated for our own purposes. Very simple. It's just like that. You approach senior Vaishnavas for instruction. That's what you approach them for. Not because they smile and pat you on the head or they do whatever they do. Because they give instruction. That instruction, then, when you find that it works for you personally, then that's consistently over time, then that's a reason for connecting yourself to that person. Because there is stable instruction. If that instruction changes, you go to where there's some other place where there's stable instruction. I mean, our acharyas, you look, Jiva Goswami and Lokanath, they were the ones who taught the ghost, Srinivas and Narottam and that. But I think Srinivas is initiated by Bhugarbha. But Lokanath is the one who's teaching. And it's Jiva's school. You know what I'm saying? So it's not a problem. Like that. Things went very nicely when Prabhupada was here because you had Prabhupada. But you also, everybody liked working under a particular senior devotee. Like that. You identify with that, you work with that. But if they went away, then you connect yourself with someone else. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's very simple. It's just, it's that simple. Because you're dealing with the emotions and all that, then that's what makes it complicated. But the process is actually very simple. It's just a matter of guru is there, relationship is there, that relationship may have been compromised or lost. You're going to feel bad for a while, and nobody complained that you're going to feel bad. You know? But with time, then naturally those other persons that you've had sexual relationships with, because you shouldn't have dropped them when you accepted initiation, right? Then you'll continue cultivating those. And either you'll get whatever you need from one place, or you get it from many places. You know what I'm saying? The point is get it. I'm hungry. Okay, I can get a little bit of the maha here, and I can buy a little maha at the front gate, and then, you know, I go down to the restaurant and I get the rest of it. If you can get it in one place, better. But if you have to get it 3, 4, 5, as long as it gets done. It's that simple. That's why these things are approached through intelligence. Then goes the mind. Because otherwise, up to the mind, no, then it's all this, that, and everything's, you know, eternal failure and disgusting and like that. Does that make sense? Yeah? So that worked? So in other words, your approach to the whole thing should be different. In other words, the problem in an understanding, that's what it means by blind following. Blind means it's because of affection. Affection and know it's right, this and that. It's just that Nandababa, you know, Krishna says, okay, you know, don't worship Indra, worship Govardhan. He doesn't. Like that. So that's what it should be, ideally. But if it's not, then intellectually you know it's right, so therefore you do it. Right? And if it's not happening, go somewhere else. Right? But this idea that the blind that you're describing doesn't fit the description. That's not what's going on. We're talking about a relationship here. If you have a good friend and they just say, hey, come with me. Where are you going? No, quiet. You know, you're going to, hey, what is this? No, I'm not just blindly following you. You know, what is this? You're going to flip. Would you ever do that? No. So, all the time in relationships, it's blind. In other words, if affection is there, blind, you don't care about it. In other words, you only cared about blind became an issue for you when there was something that you, that disturbed the relationship. Then only blind comes up as an issue. Otherwise, before it was an issue. Yes? Yeah? No? Are we getting somewhere here, or...? You want to continue, or should we move on to something else? No, it's okay. I'm just saying, we don't need to go there. I'm just saying, the point is it's enough for her to think about. And now she can work on it herself and work it out. The point is to be able to see things very, very clearly, what you're dealing with. Then it makes it easy. It may be painful, but it's easy, because you know what you're dealing with. Is that okay? Don't mind if we... Okay. Yeah. Move on. Yeah. So we'll go on to something else. Okay, you had a question.
Regarding implementing Pranashram system, is it the duty of Kshatriyas to actually start managing this implementation and try and helping others to realize the Dharma and also to support the proper support system? Is there a duty?
Is it their duty? Yes, but it's first started by the Brahmins. In other words, they're trained in it by the Brahmins. So if you don't have Brahmins, you can't have Varnashram. And since human culture starts with Brahminical culture, then the Western paradigm has a problem, because Brahmins don't mean anything. So that's why you can't establish Varnashram. You find, if you've ever been, if you're an enthusiast of Varnashram discussions or committees, you always find that the discussion is always economics. And if you bring in philosophy, then it's kind of like, well, all that philosophy is not going to grow the carrots. So that's why, no matter how many committees have been formed in this, they can't be successful, because they're not starting with the Brahminical thing. Then from there, because Varnashram starts by establishing the four ashrams. When the ashrams are established, then you can establish the Varnas. They'll always quote Varna first, but that's for understanding which ashram you should be situated in. So this is where a little knowledge is dangerous. Brahminical, you see, you just look at the quotes. Establish a class of Brahmins, then from there will affect the society. Brahmins affect the Kshatriyas. Kshatriyas get it done. So what you said is what will, how it's established. The Kshatriyas do it, but only because they're guided by the Brahmins. Because Kshatriyas acting on their own, then are, battle axe fodder for Parasuram. He didn't take kindly to Kshatriyas that wouldn't act under Brahminical direction. Because it won't work. Kshatriyas can't function on their own without Brahmins. You can't, technically speaking, you can't separate the two. Brahmins can't function without Kshatriyas, Kshatriyas without Brahmins. If you're talking social. Brahmins can go before us, Kshatriyas can go before us, fine. But if you want to function in society, then they have to have each other. They're actually basically the same thing. It's just one is more emphasizing getting it done, and the other is what should be done. Or what are the options to be done, or what's the shastra for getting done, the principles on which it's done. Understand? So Brahmins and Kshatriyas function on principles. When they understand the principle, they can work. That's why when outside of this they study the Dharma shastras, generally they get confused. Because let's say I'm a judge and I'm dealing with thievery. There's a lot of variety that could happen in thievery. So everything about thievery I would like to see in one place. And then I can then judge from this thief and the situation how I should actually deal. Right? So then I have my options and I know exactly where it's coming from and I can balance it and then come to a conclusion. But in my lifetime as a judge, some of these options I may never come across. But I would want them there so I can see what are the extremes and what are the limits and everything. This is someone who works on principles. But someone who works on the externals, on numbers, on emotion, they don't like this, because then there's all these harsh punishments. These are punishments that a king may never see those things in his lifetime. But the options, so he knows, so he's clear. If any situation that comes before me, I know how to deal with it. Maybe out of 10 options, only 3 ever come before him. But he's comfortable and confident because he knows all 10. Right? So that's why it has to start with Brahmins and Kshatriyas, not Vaishyas. Vaishyas can't establish Varnashram. They can establish good economics. Because if it's up to them, everybody will work for them. Right? Modern hospital, right? Doctors are Brahmins, but they work under the administrator for money. The school system, you have an administrator, you know, and then it works, so that takes precedence. And not only that, it has to make money. So that's why it doesn't work. The bourgeois culture that we have now, what you call your first world culture, is a bourgeois culture. That's why it's lacking, because it's the culture established by Vaishyas. You know, Kshatriyas and Brahmins have their place, but you buy them, you do this, that. You award them with money, you don't, you take away. Does that make sense? So that's why it can't be established. If it's only Kshatriyas, it can't also be established. So it has to have the Brahmins, so the head. From the head, then you can get the others. So that's the point. Brahminical culture, what is Brahminical culture? That's the important. When that's understood, you've already figured out 5 out of 8. That's the big thing. Because the Brahmin's ashram, the ashram dharma, is the Brahmin's varna dharma. Right? In ashram dharma, you study scriptures, you do sacrifice, you do all these different things, you give in charity. These are all ashram dharma. But that is the varna dharma of the Brahmin. So now all you have to do is to manage that Brahminical culture, to create the economics for that Brahminical culture, and to do all the details so that as a society it goes on. That's all you have to add. So the major study is, what is the Brahma? Right? Does that make sense? It means in the Dharma Shastra, you have 12 chapters. 2 of those basically are philosophy. Okay, so that leaves 10 that's actually that. So of those 10, 5 are ashram dharma, and 5 basically deal with varna dharma. So of those 5 that deal with varna dharma, I mean ashram dharma, all 5 are on ashram dharma, Brahminical culture. Of the 5 on varna dharma, only 3 deal with kshatriya dharma. So that means 5 for Brahmins, 3 for kshatriyas. 1 page for Vaishyas, 2 shlokas for Shudras. Right? Then the other 2 chapters are about why you shouldn't have mixed, unmatched relations, children, and what to do if you don't properly follow the varnashram. In other words, if there's some problem with it. So 2 chapters deal with it as a problem. You understand? So what happens is the devotees are taking that 1 page and trying to make varnashram out of it. 1 page out of 12 chapters. Because a Vaishya can be a fabulous Vaishya and not have 1 good quality. He can be the most sinful, disgusting, nastiest, you know, person around. He can be a fabulous businessman. But he knows how to project. At least he's a nice guy at a business lunch and stuff like that. He could be the grossest materialist and be fabulously wealthy. Because he's just manipulating economics. But to be a Brahmin or Kshatriya, you have to have qualities. Bhagavad Gita. These are the 9 qualities that the Brahmins work off. These are the qualities of a Kshatriya. Does it mention qualities for Vaishya? No, it says these are the 4 occupational duties. So, varnashram functions because there are qualities, the Brahminical qualities, Brahminical culture. The concept of dharma, not the concept of morality, justice, and economics. That's the platform for the Vaishyas. But culture is stemming out of religion, which is the Kshatriya's field. Religion meaning who's what duty, who fits into what duty, who's, and they're doing it. But that has no real meaning. It's not progressive and it's not based on the Brahminical of transcendence. It's got to have a purpose to get us out of the material world. Otherwise, what's the use? So that's so the Kshatriya dharma, but it has to be based on the Brahminical principles. Right? So when the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas understand The rest of it's easy. The Vaishyas already know, they're already making money. Right? Or saying, oh, it's so confusing, this and that. Go to any community, and there is some economics happening in this community. There's a few, you know, what we would label as probably eccentric people who are doing some farming and dealing with the cows. But nobody really likes to hang out with them. Sometimes not. Right? Then you have a few intellectuals around the edges that nobody really likes to listen to much. You know, they pontificate this, that, and, you know, okay, then another, you know, Shastra trip. There's guys trying to control the thing, but the community outside does whatever they want. Right? Then you have those who are living outside economically, so either they're being taken care of by the temple, they're making their own money, or they're working for somebody. Right? Is there a fourth option? Of course, living off the government. But other than that, is there another option? And if you look at it, the guys that are working for somebody today were working for somebody 20 years ago. And the person that's making their own money today was making money 20 years ago. They were in the temple, they left the temple, they started a business, and now they're still running a business. So it's very easy to see who are the Vaishyas. Very easy. But these things are too shocking. You take any community, how many really know how to make money? And more shocking than that, is any of the management at that yatra ever listen to them? How to make the money? Rare. You know, there may be so many reasons, because they make the money, they want to control it, or, you know, whatever. There's so many, maybe so many reasons, but you understand? So things are quite simple. So it's not a big deal. You don't need everybody making money. You need a lot of people helping them make money, right? You have one guy, he has 10,000 guys working for him. Right? So that means, you know, you don't need 10,000 businessmen. You need one businessman and 10,000 shudras. Yeah? And the shudras have... Why would a shudra want to be a businessman? Because the businessman, his making money is not secure. He could lose it at any time. But the shudra, you have to pay him the same wage every week, whether the business is making money or not. So for a shudra, security is more important than risk. He's not willing to take risk in economics. The shudra will take risk in his art, but not in economics. Does that make sense? So actually you could say, okay, hey, we'll give everyone here $100 and start the business. You know? I've heard people say, we've never been given the capital. Who gave all these ones that are millionaires now in Alachua capital? They started $100. You take $100, you know, you go out and buy a few hats. You sell those hats, then you got $200, then you go out and buy more hats. And after a while, you're paying people to buy the hats and to sell the hats, and you sit back, you don't sell the hats anymore. That's a vaishya. If they're after 20 years still selling hats, they're not necessarily a good vaishya. Either they don't want to expand it, they don't want to take the trouble, or they're a good salesman. But the Vaishya, he'll be having people. Why should I sell hats? I got a brain. I can think of how to get them, where to get them. I'll be organizing that. I will hire people to sell hats. And you look in the communities, and those who have, that's the way it works. Does that make sense? That's a business thing.
Need for some kind of support system that should be known for helping this.
That's why you have to establish Brahminical culture, and people have to be. Because they see that everybody else is doing what they should be doing. The Kshatriyas will enforce it, but as far as the culture goes, that's the Brahmins. Because it's the mentality. It means, how do you get by? Okay, husband's done something. Now, it wasn't quite what the wife wanted, but it's as good as he can do. So now she has two options. Be satisfied with the endeavor that he's made and be happy, or be dissatisfied that it wasn't what she wanted, and then he becomes dissatisfied, and if you keep that up long enough, he'll go look for a woman he can satisfy. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, it's not so much the duty that's there, is it's the medium. Varnashram is the medium for expressing relationships. But more important is the quality of the expression. That's what the Brahmins are there for. The Kshatriyas will see that it is in order and who's supposed to be doing what duties are doing them. The Vaishyas will see that the economics for the whole system is happening. And the Shudras will see that all the work is being done that, you know, maintains the whole thing. But the actual culture of it, that has to be maintained by the Brahmins. And if you have a saintly king, he'll also do that. But even if he's not saintly, but he's willing to, you know, turn to the Brahmins, they'll get it done, and he'll manage it. Does that make sense? So the whole thing is, it has to be that faith and that, because you have to start from the essentials. You know, it's not a matter, you know, this, until it's an agrarian society, then it can't be Varnashram. It's nonsense. It means the Vedic culture is ideally agrarian. But the point is, then where did Hastinapur come from? Or Dwarka? Did you ever hear of any farmland on Dwarka Island? You ever hear about it? 10 miles by 10 miles. Krishna's family was, he had 1,600,000 kids. No, excuse me, 160,000 kids. And there are 1,028,000 acharyas. That means mature Brahmins teaching all the kids of the Yadava dynasty. Right? The center is all the palaces of Krishna. Around that are the other quadrants of the other four. Did you ever hear of farmland? So then, according to our modern Iskhanese definition of Varnashram, that wasn't Varnashram. The farmers were on the mainland. But that city means you have to get it somewhere. Even the modern still goes back to what comes out of the land. You know, you can't eat nuts and bolts. But they put it more on trade than on farming. So it should be more on farming and less on trade. Trade would be there. Just where the emphasis is. You know, so you can't get around it. So the point is, Varnashram is a mentality. It's not an economic system. That's why I say the Vaishyas cannot establish Varnashram. They can make some nice thing for them and Shudras, and they can pay the Kshatriyas their tax and hopefully respect the Brahmins. So they can have that. That's how the villages work. Is the head of the village, the king of the village, is the Vaishya, not a Kshatriya. Nandabhava is the Vaishya. Right? Kshatriyas are in Mathura. They pay tax. Right? So he runs it, but he has Brahmins. Right? They respect it. It works. But it's still the Kshatriyas are there to make sure that his land is safe. Right? You know, he with his security of his sticks aren't going to keep off a neighboring kingdom. Right? They can keep away, you know, thieves and wolves and, you know, stuff like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. You have something? Okay, last one I'll finish because we're way over time. You can ask. Let's see.
What about the situation I've seen? It's not case, it's of initiated disciple withdrawing from the relationship from the spiritual master and moving to another spiritual master, also getting discovered. And stopping to use Ramana mantra of his old spiritual master instead of his mantra. Though both of them are in good standing.
Both of them are good standing? Okay. You hear? Kind of. He's saying, what about the situation where you have a devotee who moves from one spiritual master in good standing to another spiritual master in good standing and gives up his connection and chanting mantras of the first? I wouldn't recommend it. He can take shelter of the second one, and he can be the prominent one, you know, just get the permission of the other, and but the pranam mantras would be the first one. Because he's the one who's connecting. You can also say the ones of the second. You know, or he can, in general, let's say when he's doing official puja, he has the picture of, you know, his Diksha Guru and his Siksha Guru. At that time, use the mantras and that. Maybe during the rest of the day, he doesn't. He uses the mantra of the Siksha Guru. But to not to change Siksha Gurus like that means I personally wouldn't trust such a person. And then the problem comes is, you might find the difficulty that those in the spiritual world won't trust you either. If somebody who's bona fide, you're not following, then, you know, I mean, there's serious, there's serious political considerations in the Vrindavan pastimes. If you're changing from one group to another, you're untrustworthy. And no one in Braj is going to want to deal with you. You know, I mean, everybody's in groups. There's 108 groups of cows. Even the cows are in groups. You know? Let alone the gopis. You know, the cowherd men. You know, there's groups under Nanda Baba, groups under Rishabhanu Maharaj, and groups under what's his name? It's a lady who we don't mention her name's husband. Can't remember his name. Not Abhimanyu is Radharani's husband. We mentioned Radharani's name. I'm talking about someone else. The Shakti scholar. I can't remember what his name is. Something Chandrachandra. I can't remember. But he's the other one. So there's three main groups of Goshas. Those who are on Krishna's side, those who are on Radharani's side, and those who are opposed. Like that. They won't trust you. You may have your reasons, this, that, but I guarantee if you take, it's all emotional. It's nothing philosophical. So there's no problem. You have a problem with the guru, you can't understand what he says, your relationship's broken up, fine. With his permission, take shelter of someone else and continue on siksha. But why make a mockery of the pancharatric system? Because you're ignorant, don't know what you're doing. You can play around as you want. Hey. Just because it's subtle, then you don't think there's reactions. You know, it's not gross. Okay, I drop something, it breaks. Okay, I don't do that. But this is subtle. So then, you know. So that means, technically, they're not going to settle down under any authority. They won't be able to settle down under any temple president, anybody else, GBC, nobody. And they say they're with this person today, but just let the mood change a little bit, and then where do they go? You know, oh no, I'm situated fine today, but you were situated fine a few years ago at number one. And now something happened, he stopped smiling at you, or I don't know what, you know, didn't brush his teeth, I don't know, something, and now you've gone to the other. So that's not spiritual life. It's not honest. It's cheating. You want to establish, predominate with the other guru? Fine. That's bona fide. Just take permission of your guru and do it. There's no reason the Siksha Guru can't be more prominent than the Diksha Guru. That's not a problem. You know, the normal thing is it's not, but it can work that way. You know? Does that make sense? But they shouldn't think that they can just play with systems established by Guru Sadhana Shastra. It's not a joke, it's not a game. These are real. You had four sannyasis in 1970 took up Mayavad philosophy and were polluting the whole Vaishnava community. That's bad. Prabhupada kicked him out of the society. He didn't take sannyasa away from them. Sannyasa is a real thing. It's not a game that you politically play with. And he sent them out. You're sannyasis, you go start your own mission. Go preach your own philosophy. They went out as sannyasis, and when they figured out what went wrong, they came back as sannyasis. So Prabhupada didn't take the Vedas as a game. He didn't take Varnashram or Pancharatra or Bhagavad as a game. You just play with as we like. I'm not saying all this to you, I'm just saying I have a question. So that's the whole thing, is devotees have a tendency, because we don't care for the rules, they make a mockery also of the rules that God made. So they don't know where is the line. They don't know where is the line. Like that. Like, let us say, as a grihastha, you owe five debts. It says you owe five debts, that's it. To the demigods, to the forefathers, to the ghosts, to the Brahmins, and to people in general. Because only because of all these five, you have a grihastha ashram. You have to pay them. You don't. You go to hell. No ifs, no ands, no buts. But because you're worshipping Krishna, therefore that debt is taken care of. But the debt is there. It's not that, oh, now the devotee has no debt. No, the debt's there, but it's been paid. We just take it, oh, it disappears. It doesn't disappear. Right? So if you give up serving Krishna, you have to pay those five debts. You have to feed Brahmins. You have to do Shraddha for your forefathers. You have to, you know, take care of the Balidan for all the ghosts and all that, and the living entities. You have to take care of your family members. You have to study the Shastras and do sacrifice. You don't do those, you go to hell. But because you're a devotee, you feed devotees, you engage your family in Krishna consciousness, you're doing the ultimate yajna, Sankirtan yajna, you're studying the highest of all scriptures. But you can't give those up and then think you're going to be fine. No, these things are real. You know, you step out in front of a Mack truck, you're dead. You may say, oh no, it's just a matter of the consciousness. You're dead. You fall off a building, you're dead. You know, so that's the thing. Somehow or another, everything else is real, but somehow or another, the Shastras are not real. This is a very, very strange mentality. You know, I have to be real for you. So that means you weren't, so translation, you have to be real for you, means I was not intelligent enough to understand the principles of the Vedic literatures that Prabhupada's given in his books, and not able to apply it to my life for time, place, and circumstance. End translation. But because being, you know, socially acceptable and that, and I have a false ego and I have to feel good about myself, but I can't function because, you know, I read that in one book. And so, therefore, I have to, it's got to be someone else's fault, and I'm okay and you're okay and we're all okay. And so then, you know, I do what I do, you do what you do, and, you know, everything's fine. I won't talk about it and you don't talk about it, and, you know, like nice ostriches with our heads in the sand, everything looks good. But the reality is something else. The material world is made by God. It's not made by America. It's not made by England. It's made by God. And it functions the way God functions. You take the worst Malechan Yama, he still functions according to the modes made by God. You can read Bhagavad Gita and say exactly what the guy's going to do. Name one thing that any modern person does that's not mentioned in Gita under the modes of nature, divine and demoniac qualities. Name it. It doesn't exist. I challenge anybody. Modern man is so different. Oh, we can't dress, we can't do it. Well, what's different? What's going on? I don't understand. Do we eat differently than Arjuna ate? We put it in our mouth, you know, but he, you know, smeared it on the top of his head. You know? Clothes. Did Arjuna conceive Abhimanyu in some way different than parents nowadays conceive kids? Sugar now is sweet, but before it wasn't. Salty also wasn't salty before. That's why the Romans used it as money, because it wasn't salty. It was salt, but it wasn't salty. That's why it was money, not salt. Right? What has changed? All that's changed is people's faith and willingness to work under authority. That's all that's changed. In other words, the human qualities have descended to such a level that even animal life starts to look good. At least animals, you know what they're going to do. You know what a dog will do. Somebody comes to the door, they will bark. They will wag their tail. They will run across the floor. They will claw at the door. Guaranteed. So, they're more stable. Modern humans? Never know from day to day, because the political winds of correctness change. Right? Because everyone wants to get what they want, but not take any responsibility for it. And if there is any responsibility, it's someone else. Yeah? Okay. So therefore, devotees should stop playing around with the Pancharatric system and understand how to approach and accept a guru, how to function within that, and if there's any difficulties, how to adjust with that. The Shastra gives that. The sages are smart. They have thought of situations you've never even thought of. Like here, I'll give you one simple one. Why is it that the disciple, and there's so many gurus, like you probably met this, that one disciple is so enthusiastic about his guru, and he's always recommending to others, oh, my guru's doing this, doing that, come to this, he's giving class, and they're always so enthusiastic, right? So, one, he's taking it as guru bhakti, others might take it as guru bhakti, but actually it's just false ego. Why? Because he's special, not his guru. And because he's special, naturally his guru's special. Just like, you know, you have a nice dhoti, my dhoti's special. Because it's my dhoti. I didn't pick that dhoti because it wasn't cool. It wasn't me. You understand? So the sages have taken it to that level. So they've described everything. And if it's not there, then the senior Vaishnavas get together and based on Guru Sadhana Shastra, they work out what will practically work for the time, place, and circumstance, and then one follows that. So there's no loopholes. It's perfect. But it means we have to study. We can say, oh, well, nobody knows, so then what are we going to do about it? So why don't we start knowing? Start endeavoring, start learning. Yeah? And then, that's good. Prabhupada wanted a class of Brahmins. Because if you have them, you have everything else, spiritual and material. You don't have them, you have nothing spiritual, you have nothing material. Or at least, it'll be there, but it won't be dynamic like it could be. Does that make sense? So it's like that. So a person like that, I wouldn't trust. At all. Because that means they can turn on anybody. You understand? If you can turn on a guru like that, you can turn on family, friends, Krishna. That's why it's so dangerous. That's what I'm saying. They don't know what they're playing with. Very dangerous. But it's just, oh, he didn't like, oh, yeah, they say, yeah, I know what you mean. But what in the long run? So that's why it's like that. Just regulate it. Understand that your connection, Krishna is recognizing your connection to him through that first guru, not through the second. It's being maintained and nourished through the second one. So if you don't accept the first one, technically you're not connected. You ever seen, we just had a flood. You ever see the Champa trees? Champa, frangipanis? They're kind of a big, kind of fat, round. In Samadhi, you have a bunch of them, those round seats in the middle. Interesting thing, after the flood, they look alive. The tops are all green, the leaves are green, and everything. But if you go to the bottom's dead. And if you don't cut it off there and replant it, then the whole thing dies. Right? It's not like other trees that die from the out to the root. This one died, the root dies, and the outside can continue. So that's the whole point. If something happens to the original, move on. But if you're going to do it improperly, saying, oh, I don't need this first guru, even though he is your recognized, you know, you may recognize or not, but it's God that you have to worry about if he recognizes. Who cares if you recognize your first guru or don't? It's whether God does. Our opinion doesn't matter. That's not what's important. It is our opinion through our conviction and understanding is connected with God's. That's what we look for. So it's not blind. It's personal conviction. So if he doesn't understand, then his whole devotional life will dry up. Because there's no root. But he accepts that this connection is there, it's like that, but I'm nourishing it through this second person, and there's respect for that first guru because of that connection, what he did do in the past, maybe he's not doing anything now, but he did do in the past, then we'll move forward. Then it's dynamic. Otherwise, this person's spiritual life, with time, will be doomed. Right? Means we're talking on the both gurus are in good standing. Right? That's what you said. The first one's not in good standing, then you move to the second one, you don't need to refer to the first one. Like that. But if the first one's in good standing, then he has to be recognized. That may not be where your attention is or anything, it's on the second, fine. But you can't ignore it. You can't say, it's just like, you know, I don't like my father, so I have no connection with him. So then who are you in society? What's your name? You know? So that's the point. Is you may not like, you may take shelter of the uncles or this or that, fine. But you are connected to those uncles because of the connection with the father. Like that. So even your relationship with the others is because of your relationship with him. Other meaning, the second guru, him meaning the first. Yeah? Okay, so I think we'll end here. Dekha? Srila Prabhupada ki, Samadhi Ka Bhakti Vrinda ki, Jaya Nidai Gauru Vrinda ki.